Why? We'll get your reactions, and we're live in one of the areas. In other news, Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch: it's not British boys who need misogyny lessons, it's migrants. She's criticising the government's strategy. She told LBC,
"This is happening because some people in Labour watched adolescents, and that's what they want to focus on. It's a complete distraction. They need to do the right thing, put police officers on the street."
EU leaders racing to reach a deal on funding Ukraine. You could be trying to race across the country. It's a great getaway day. Stay tuned. We'll tell you everything we need to know. And as new workers' rights come in,
Currys beyond expectations.
The boss of Currys says it will be a disaster in employment. Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, European Union leaders have agreed to provide a huge interest-free loan to Ukraine. The 90 billion euros, which should support Kiev for 2 years, will be funded by borrowing and not frozen Russian assets. Belgium, where most of them are stored, opposed the plan over concerns about Moscow's response. The European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen has been speaking overnight.
The immobilized Russian assets will remain immobilized, and the Union reserves its right to make use of the cash balances to finance the loan.
LBC has learned ministers have quietly dropped a target to reduce premature births in England. A goal to reduce the proportion of preterm births by a quarter was introduced under the previous government in 2017. It's the UK's biggest cause of death among children under five. David Badcock is chief executive of the premature birth research charity Born.
We have one of the higher rates of preterm birth compared to other high-income countries in Europe. We need to have better understanding of what causes preterm birth, and we can develop more interventions to either prevent it or delay it. And that will have a big impact on the outcomes of lots of premature babies that are born too early.
The Department of Health says it's determined to transform maternity and neonatal services. Australia's Prime Minister's announced a scheme to buy back people's guns in the wake of the Bondi terror attack. The scheme is one of a series of new control measures for firearms. 15 people died and dozens more were injured in the massacre at a Hanukkah celebration on Sunday. Essex Police has confirmed it will not investigate allegations Reform UK broke election spending rules in Nigel Farage's constituency. Officers say the claim fall outside a one-year statutory time limit, so no investigation can take place. The limit of £100 on contactless payments will be lifted from March. It'll be up to individual banks to set their own limits when the rules change. And Australia have built a commanding lead on day three of the crucial third Ashes test. A short time ago, they were 271 for four, leading England by 356 with a century from Travis Head. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 98.37. after closing up 63 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers with the driest conditions in the south and east, the rain most frequent in the north and west. A high of 11 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission. And it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven on Friday, December the 19th. The government says ballots to your chance to get to the ballot box and vote out many of them. Around 10 million of you have had your local elections delayed again until 2027. Let's be honest. They're running scared. They're frightened. That's the reality. We'll be speaking to a government minister on that later in the show and, of course, taking your calls. In other news, are we getting close to getting the cash back from Baroness Bra, Michelle Moan? Health Secretary Wes Streeting addressed it during Call the Cabinet with me here on LBC exclusively last month.
This is such a disgraceful state of affairs. And ripping off the taxpayer in any circumstances is unacceptable.
In other news,
the government has quietly dropped a target to reduce the rate of premature births by a quarter. I'm LBC's Helen Hodnott with the exclusive.
It's Workers' Rights Day, hailed by the Prime Minister as a huge advance. Meanwhile, business bosses and some prominent ones, including the man who runs Currys, are saying it's wrong. I'll be asking who's right on that. And how have we got to a situation where chanting intifada in Westminster will get you arrested, but down, for instance, in Westmorling in Kent, it won't? There's division among the police forces. Meanwhile, in Manchester, 10-year-old girls are asking police to escort them to Hanukkah parties, addressed by Manchester's Greater Manchester Police's Chief Constable yesterday, Sir Stephen Watson.
A group of 10-year-old girls wanting to go to a Hanukkah party, where they should be, frankly, interested in balloons and bicycles, are making a request for armed police officers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Yeah, shockingly, as we come towards the end of your Hanukkah celebrations, if you're Jewish, which is meant to be the festival of light, there seems to be nothing but darkness on that horizon for everyone Jewish in our country, and we'll come to that story a little bit later. But also darkness, running scared. Nearly 10 million of you face having your local election delayed until 2027. This, of course, prompts claims that Labour and the Conservatives are colluding to stop Reform UK, and the Lib Dems claim them as well, doing rather well and getting into power in local elections. We'll tell you where the areas are, and of course we want to hear your views. But first, let's go to the LBC reporter, Emma Corr, who's in the West Sussex County Council constituency in Horsham. Emma, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, ministers are being accused of kicking democracy into the long grass, with up to 63 council areas, many in the southeast, including here in West Sussex. They could opt to delay local elections until 2027 if they formally request it by mid-January. Now, this has all come as quite a surprise after the Secretary for State on Local Government, Steve Reid, was asked only on Tuesday by the Shadow Local Government Minister Paul Holmes if the local elections would be going ahead, and this was his response.
On electoral resilience, last week the Speaker's Committee on the Electoral Commission noted that the Commission was not consulted at all on the cancellation of the 2026 mayoral elections. So will he update us on whether council elections are going ahead or not, or will he cancel more at the last minute, and will he give electoral officials plenty of notice, whatever he chooses to do?
He asked about the elections that are scheduled to go ahead. They will be going ahead.
Well, Nick, local polls in nine areas, many in the southeast, including county councils Suffolk, Essex, Hampshire and here West Sussex, have already been postponed once. They should have taken place last May. If delayed again until 2027, some councillors could go 7 years without facing voters. Now, why the delay? Well, the government is restructuring and reorganising councils, part of Labour's local government reform plan, merging two-tier councils into larger unitary authorities, which they say affects councils' capacity to hold elections, as local government minister Alison McGovern explained yesterday.
Many councils across the country and of all stripes have expressed anxiety about their capacity to deliver a smooth and safe transition to new councils alongside running resource-intensive elections to councils proposed to be shortly abolished.
So a change of mind from government after 48 hours and the announcement coming the last day before Parliament broke up for Christmas yesterday, which has triggered plenty of backlash, and not just from the Conservatives. The Liberal Democrats say voters are being shut out, while Reform UK has gone further. Nigel Farage has accused Labour and the Conservatives of colluding to block Reform's momentum, calling it banana republic stuff and threatening legal action. Reform is currently 10 points ahead of Labour in the latest YouGov poll. And this decision comes just weeks after the first mayoral elections in many southeast areas were pushed back to 2028. For some voters here in Sussex, for example, that could mean waiting 2 years to vote for their local councillor and 3 years for a mayor. Final decisions will be made in the new year on this, Nick.
Emma Corr reporting from West Sussex, 9 after 7. Let's put some of those points that are being made. First to Callum Miller, who is a Lib Dem MP and indeed serves as their foreign affairs spokesperson, joins me now. Thank you for coming on, Mr. Miller. I think it's pretty easy to say, or rather I could phrase it, is this an assault on democracy? How would you react to that? Good morning to you.
Good morning. This is a stitch-up. The Labour government has slipped this out on the last day of parliamentary sitting, and as your reporter said, just 2 weeks ago they cancelled 6 mayoral elections and they reassured everyone that these elections in other councils would be going ahead next year. All you conclude is that the Labour government is running scared of the electorate and doesn't want to see democracy in practice across the areas that these elections have been cancelled.
Mr. Miller, what do you make of their assertion that this is to allow further reorganisation of local government? It's worth noting that it wasn't that many years ago that we were able to invade France and reclaim the whole of Europe, but we don't seem to be able to get Sussex County Council on track. Mr. Miller.
It's the government's decision to reorganise things. It is already a project that's been delayed, as the delays to the mayoral election show. And certainly in my area, I know that, as they always do, professional local government officers have been preparing hard for these elections in May and are very ready for them to go ahead, not least because they've already invested in them. And one thing I'd say is, if the government does insist on cancelling these, it should make sure it reimburses councils and council taxpayers for the costs that have already been incurred in setting up these elections. There's absolutely no reason to cancel them, other than what one can only conclude is a stitch-up between Labour and the Conservatives, who are going backwards in the polls and don't want to face the voters.
Not trying to hijack you, do you have any sense of what those costs might be, or is it impossible to actually put a figure on it?
I'm afraid I don't have a figure for those.
Okay, something I'll challenge Sir Chris Bryant later in the show. Let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned your constituency, Bicester and Woodstock. When you're out there, you're probably out later today, I would imagine, certainly you'll be out and about on the weekend. What are you picking up? What are people telling you as a serving MP, Mr. Miller?
The concerns at this time of year, Nick, are the ones you would expect. There are those who've got relatives in hospital, those who are poorly, who are appalled by some of the delays that they're facing. They're really worried about the flu outbreak and the chances that they may not be seen quickly. Many people, as we head towards Christmas and the costs that come with that, are deeply concerned about the cost of living, which is still affecting so many people, not just in the residential area, but speaking to my businesses. I was speaking to two publicans recently who were pointing out the extraordinary rise in costs that they're facing, not just the tax burdens from government changes, but also just the price of food is going up enormously for them as they try and put meals on the table at a reasonable price for those who are going to enjoy hospitality in pubs this Christmas. So people are really feeling the pinch. And they are looking for answers. They're looking for a government that can deliver some growth, some jobs, some opportunity, and reduce the tax burden somewhat, which is crushing the life out of a number of local businesses.
Lastly, and I think I know the answer to this, but I will ask you, will this in any way dent the enthusiasm of the Liberal Democrats, your colleagues and your party workers who are going out, putting on leaflets, knocking on doors? Will it dent, or will it just sharpen your determination for great results as and when you're allowed to have them? Mr. Miller.
We are a party that loves knocking on doors, loves being part of the community and speaking to residents. And I know that my activists have got large piles of leaflets and lots of lists of people to go and speak to over the Christmas period. I think they'll probably take a break on Christmas Day, but otherwise we'll be out in our community having a chat with residents and looking to win any election we're given the chance to fight in.
Thanks for your time. Callum Miller is a Lib Dem MP, also serves as the party's foreign affairs spokesperson, 12 after 7. Well, let's speak to the other challenging party, a challenger party. If you'll allow that it's the Conservatives and the Labour government are seeking not for elections, and bring into the conversation Stephen Atkinson. Now, he's leader of the Lancashire County Council, leader of the Reform UK group on the LGA, which is the local government association. Councillor, thanks for coming on the show. What do you put this down to? Good morning.
They're really scared, Nick. These conversations, I've been told by Labour leaders in Lancashire, have been going on for weeks and weeks. So even when the Minister or the Secretary of State are making these statements, there's a back channel into Downing Street. And I think it's absolutely appalling. We were told last year there was going to be a one-year delay in those county council areas to allow devolution. That 1 year's gone, so the reason for that delay is gone, and now they're finding another reason. And it won't be 7 years, it'll be 8 years, because they'll be in shadow form for 1 year. This is absolutely appalling. You lose democracy one step at a time, and before you know, you've moved a very long way. Now, it's Kemi Badenoch needs to take a stand on this. She needs to send a message to her council leaders telling them not to take part in this, because if she doesn't, she's as bad as the Labour Party. And this is a big test for Kemi Badenoch.
Can you give me a sense of the level of concern or possible anger there is across Lancashire with the current government and possibly even the Conservatives, Councillor?
Well, the government, the Labour Party and the Conservatives were almost wiped out in these county council elections. So the Conservatives went from, I think, 46 councillors to 8, and Labour went from 32 to 5. And that's because people in the shires have been left behind. All the investment goes into the cities. You know, we don't get trams. We don't even get buses in some of these rural areas. But you see this fantastic investment in your Manchesters, your Leeds, your Birminghams, your Londons. So people fed up and they want their voice. Council tax is one of the biggest household bills, and there should be no taxation without representation. So what we're doing here, all that social contract is breaking down, and people are not being given an opportunity to express their views through the ballot box. And you know what? This is a big test. If this continues, the king needs to think about things. Because ultimately, democracy is one of its key things, is that the king can dissolve parliament. And we're losing jury trials, we're having ID, and now we're losing elections. 20 years ago, the Foreign Office would be putting a statement out in a foreign country if this had happened. And the BBC don't even seem to be tackling this seriously. Well, this is really serious.
Don't worry, you've always got LBC. Lastly, can you update us? Your party leader, Nigel Farage, is quoted in the papers as saying he could be looking up at plans to draw, to bring about a legal challenge. Have you had an update from him or not had an opportunity to speak as yet?
We have some fantastic lawyers at Reform, and they're looking into this very closely. One further thing, Nick. Gold principles brought in by the Blair government in 2007 after catastrophic elections in Scotland said you should not tamper with elections 6 months before the election date. And that's the law in many countries, that they're just riding roughshod. And I think it's appalling. And just to quote one Labour MP.
Briefly, if you would, go ahead.
He said we're better than this.
Okay, well, grateful for that. I have to leave it there. Thank you, Councillor Stephen Atkinson, leader of Lancashire County Council and also leader of the Reform UK group on the LGA, the Local Government Association. So the population of England, I stress England, is north of 50 million, 10 million of whom now, so that's one in five, denied the vote. And we all know why, to quote one of my contributors, they're running scared. But how angry does that make you? Do you give a 4X for your opportunity to put your X in those ballots? We'll take your calls on that. Plus, it is the great getaway day. I'm driving home for Christmas. Oh, I can't wait to see those faces. Well, you're probably all right if you're on the road right now, but of course it is the getaway day, and we'll give you a full update of not just the roads, the rails and everything else right after this. 7:16 LBC News headlines to Thomas Watts.
European leaders have agreed to provide Ukraine with a €90 billion loan, but it won't be funded by frozen Russian assets. LBC has learned ministers have quietly dropped a target to cut the rate of premature births in England. And Australia's announced a national gun buyback scheme in the wake of the Bondi terror attack. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers, the driest conditions in the south and east, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. In Barnes, the terrace is blocked in both directions because of an accident between White Hart Lane and the High Street, so there are queues. It's slow in Southgate. Osage Lane is blocked both ways because of an accident between Manor Drive and Chase Side. There's only one Woolwich Ferry running. That's because of technical problems. On the train, CTC have delays of up to half an hour and some cancellations between Fenchurch Street and Grays. That's because of problems with the signals. That also means that on London Overground, there's no service on the Suffragette line between Barking and Barking Riverside, and minor delays on the rest of the Suffragette jet line. Also on the trains, Greater Anglia have no service between Broxbourne and Hartford East. That's because of flooding. And on the tube, there's still no service on the Bakerloo line between Queen's Park and Harrow and Wealdstone because of an investigation.
This is LBC.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Booking Hero. On the beach, no does city breaks.
Flipping heck, I'm going to have to change the name. On the city? Not sure about that.
But you can take your pick from over 50 cities and thousands of hotels. Stop booking around and visit onthebeach.co.uk.
On the beach.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
This Christmas Eve, the £50 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Yes, the £50 million Lotto jackpot must be won on Christmas Eve. There's magic in the air, so get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Attack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Ow! When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Any tips for the racing?
Yeah. Your best bet is to head to BetVictor for their new customer welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they give you £20 in free bets on the horse racing. But here's another tip. If you're at the races, head to the paddock. You get lots of info they don't put in the race cards.
Like what?
Like the fact I'm seeing one of them drop a lot of weight right now.
No. Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the racing at BetVictor. 18 plus, opt in, bet on horse racing at odds of evens or greater, no cash out, 7-day expiry, terms and conditions apply, gambleaware.org.
Get Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 7, let me take you through some of the headlines on, of course, this last Friday before Christmas, and we're giving you more on that, by the way, if you're trying to travel home. We're going to my LBC colleague Dave Goff, who's going to be telling you about the roads and the rails and just about everything else, about the other side of the headlines. Let's start with, well, actually, two newspapers have put this on their front page, both the Daily Mail and the Times. The Mail's headline, Labour's running scared of voters. The Times, voters face longer wait to kick out councillors, and we will be taking some of your reactions on that in just a moment. Just quickly, a couple of the other headlines. I won't bore you with all of them, but the good decision by the Governor of the Bank of England, and indeed the Monetary Committee for that matter, is the front page of the Eye. Mortgage price war in spring 2026 as bank offers hope on inflation. We'll be getting more on that in our regular look at the world of finance in a little over 10 minutes' time. And The Guardian goes with new Epstein photos. This is, of course, the disgraced dead paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Show quotes from Lolita written on women. They really are ghastly images. Why anyone would start to write bits of Lolita on a girl's foot is beyond me. And there's also sort of sheets put together for some of the girls available, giving their height, their weight, their weight. Their ethnicity and whether they're part of the Schengen zone so that they can be moved around Europe. Effectively, as you would almost treat animals for live export, it is truly shocking. That story goes on and on in that fashion. Let's go to the LBC app, and that is telling you that the EU announces €90 billion loan for Ukraine in a warning shot to Putin, but fails to agree on using frozen Russian assets. And that reminds... Do you remember when the United Kingdom was part of the European Union and they had those summits, or indeed the Brexit talks, and I was unfortunate to be a victim of it once? They love delaying everything. So let's say that there will be you'll have a full release at 11 o'clock tonight, and it would get to 5 to 11, 1 minute. No, we've delayed it. And I have witnessed journalists sleeping on the floor at that horrific place in Brussels because they just hooked on the drama of it all. What do you need to know? You have got people fighting and dying on your borders and between your borders and Russia. They're after money. What is there to argue about? It's not as if this damn war started yesterday. They've had years. This paralysis that hits the European Union is extraordinary at times. Take one other story at random from the website. Well, this is The Sun's website. And this is there on the website. Bosch, Strictly star Thomas Skinner to sue the BBC for rigging voting. To get him off show, he claims he has proof. Do you remember when Strictly Come Dancing used to be a bit of fun on a Saturday night? And you see someone like the lovely John Sargent, who couldn't dance, or Anne Widdecombe, and everyone, or even Ed Balls, and everyone would have a damn good laugh and go off to the pub. Now it's treated almost like an Olympic sport. We're getting lawyers involved. What on earth went wrong? You can hardly blame Claudia deciding to leave that, can you? Now, we're going to take your reactions in just a moment, but because my colleague Dave has many bulletins to hit, let's go straight to LBC's travel correspondent, Dave Goff, who's at the travel desk. Dave, thanks for coming on. I know you're busy today, as are many other people going to be. I've got a note here, the AA saying nearly 24.5 million cars will hit the roads today. What are we looking at? Give us some pointers already. Dave, morning.
Morning, Nick. It's a serious amount of vehicles, isn't it, that are expected today? It is the biggest day for the Christmas getaway forecast today across the schools, all packing up today. I know we're not quite there for Christmas, and we're talking Thursday for Christmas Day, and you'd think maybe this is going to be a bit of staggered journey times, but they're still forecasting that it's going to be a very busy one on the roads today. The advice, of course, is to always give yourself plenty of time to get to your festive destination. Looking at the moment, things are okay. I mean, it's still a nightmare getting into London on the M4. That's just because the car's broken down, but right. It is forecast that the M25 will be very busy later, going past Heathrow, also at the Dartford crossing on the M25. West of England, of course, you've got the M4, the M5 interchange, likely to be incredibly busy, and the A303 around Stonehenge. In the Midlands, the M5, the M6 interchange, that's looking like to be one of the hot spots, and the M60 in Greater Manchester around the Trafford Centre, also likely to be very, very busy. And, of course, tomorrow, the last Saturday before Christmas Day, so it's looking like it's going to be very busy around the big shopping centres and the UK's city centres.
Quick word on the railways. Network Rail encouraging passengers to allow extra time. It is early. It's not even 7:25 right now. No problems so far on the rail network.
Rail's looking good, although it is, of course, best if you're making a long-distance journey, book ahead, especially if you want to try and get a seat. The main thing as well to look forward to next week, of course, Christmas Eve. It's an earlier finish. Some people forget that and get stuck. Last thing you want to do is get stuck on Christmas Eve, and of course no trains on Christmas Day, and only a handful of services on Boxing Day. And then of course looking ahead to after Christmas, the big engineering works start on the rails from the 27th. All that to look forward to after the festive period.
All right, Dave, I'll let you get back to prepping for your next bulletin. Dave Gough, LBC's travel correspondent, joining us from the LBC travel desk. Let's come to your reactions then. Around 10 million of you will be denied. In some instances, this means it'll be 7 years since you've had a democratic vote on how your local authority is run, and indeed the councillors who make it up. Which, when you consider, and I know we all get hugely excited about national politics, but in reality, much of your lives is affected by these men and women who serve on your councils. The provision of anything from just taking away the rubbish outside your house to putting books in the library or waters in the swimming pool comes down to what these people do. And the fact that you will not have your say for this many years is understandably annoying quite a lot of you. Jeff in Thielby, read this decision. Surely there's something in our laws or regulations that could stop this farce. It's a total contradiction of living in a democratic country. It's a disgrace, says Jeff, and proves to me that Starmer is more concerned about keeping his position than he is recognising the public's overwhelming wish to see him removed. I didn't think Starmer would sink any lower, but he has. He is the most useless and ineffectual Prime Minister I've seen in my 61 years. Jeff, thank you. It's worth saying as well, or worth noting, that Kemi Badenoch is also, the Conservatives are also in the frame here, because as one of my contributors said, if Mrs. Badenoch was to swing the entire Conservative Party behind this and say, up with this, we will not put, then there would be enormous pressure on the government. And this idea that you'd be delayed in some areas until 2027 would have to be revisited. But you have to say that at the moment, if you look at the polls, the Conservatives are going to be probably taking as much as a kicking as Labour are. So they are probably motivated by that. Jason in Plymouth makes the point, bringing in our old friend Donald Trump into the conversation. They like to shout at Donald Trump for being anti-democratic, while Labour are acting like communists. This is absolutely shocking, says Jason. Tony would seem to agree. Starmer is desperate to avoid elections in May. He'd invoke martial law if he could. He almost needs a war with Russia to stay in power. Keith says, democracy delayed is democracy denied. That's, of course, what they say about justice, isn't it? And don't forget, this government's also taken... It is an extraordinary picture when you think about it, actually. I'll tell you what you reminded me there, Keith. They're going to be doing away with jury trials in all but the most grave cases or grave offences. We're now not going to be able to have a vote in approximately about one in five of you, maybe a little bit under 10 million, 50 of them. Yeah, just a little under. One in five of you, in some instances, will not be able to vote for 7 years. There's only one. Let's be candid. There's only one reason that you're doing this. Gosh, there's so many coming in. Anthony and Hove, if Labour's not worried, why are they asking all these councils that if they want to delay the elections? Terry in Slough, another one of our slightly more senior listeners. Terry says, I'm in my 70s, and in my opinion, this Labour government is the most dishonest, incompetent, and useless government I've seen in my lifetime. And I've seen some terrible ones. Well, if you're in your 70s, I can think that you possibly go back almost as far as I do, so I can agree with that. So those are the local elections that we tell you about, the level of that they're going to be denied, something we will be putting to a government minister a little bit later. Also, the minister we're going to be speaking with is the Trade Minister, and this is supposedly Workers' Rights Days, hailed by Sir Keir Starmer and his party as putting right the workplace. Meanwhile, bosses, such as the man who runs Currys, and I don't need to remind you how big they are, say they're absolutely off track. So who's right over workers' rights? Also, coming up after the news...
The PPE company linked to the ex-Tory peer Michelle Moan goes into liquidation. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with the full story.
And if we're talking about Michelle Moan, let's talk more about money and the decision by the Bank of England yesterday, of course, as you've already heard here on LBC, but the possibility that now there could be a mortgage price war next spring. Rates could be, I stress, could be, if you're trying to get one, as low as 3% early in the new year. The Bank of England expecting inflation to fall faster than was initially forecast. As we've told you already, the interest rates are cut to 3.75%. Now, that's the lowest since 2023. And as another set of figures were produced yesterday, suggestions that inflation could get to around 2% next year, meaning, obviously, that would bring some relief on the bills you pay, not just from the supermarket, but all the others. We're going to give you more on that in our regular look at the world of finance. It's 7.30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. And the news is with Thomas Watts.
European Union leaders have agreed a loan for Ukraine to help fund its war effort and economic needs for the next 2 years. They will give Kyiv 90 billion euros, but it'll be funded by borrowing and not frozen Russian assets. The government has quietly dropped a target to reduce the rate of premature births in the UK. Premature births occur before 37 weeks of pregnancy and remain the leading cause of neonatal death. Australia has announced a national gun buyback scheme in the wake of the Bondi terror attack. 15 people died and dozens more were injured when gunmen opened fire at the Hanukkah celebration on Sunday. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers, the driest conditions in the south and east, the rain most frequent in the north and west, a high of 11 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Whatever you think of the resident doctors going on strike, the ability to be able to strike, I think, really is very important, even if I disagree with people actually doing it. As much as I disagree with the doctors going out on strike now, they should have waited. I think Kenny Badenoch's call is too far. I wouldn't want to see resident doctors, or actually anyone in the NHS, prevented from striking at all.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
At Lidl, you can get a whole Christmas dinner for eight for under £1.50 per person with all the trimmings, including fresh Birchwood British whole turkey, potatoes, Yorkshire stuffing, sprouts, carrots, parsnips, and of course the gravy. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only. Fresh turkeys on sale 19th of December. See lidl.co.uk/LBTV for details.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
Gift more for less when you shop at the O2 this Christmas. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 of their favourite designer brands, including Nike, Tommy Hilfiger, Le Creuset, the cosmetics company store, and Lindt. Tick everyone off your list. Start the festivities at one of our 30 bars and restaurants. Enjoy a movie or get competitive with bowling, climbing, interactive football, indoor skydiving, and more. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Just coming up on 7.33, local elections. Comments coming from you, Kevin. I think you might be an area that's affected by this, and we'll come to you in a moment or three. But let's get into the world of finance. We always do around this time of the morning. And here's the Governor of the Bank of England, Andrew Bailey, speaking yesterday about what he sees as a more positive economic outlook, following, of course, that interest rate cut down to 3.75%.
Well, our job is to obviously have inflation at target. And we've had, you know, some real challenges in recent years with some very big shocks in the world economy. I'm certainly very encouraged and very encouraged today. I think we are seeing progress. So there are reasons to be optimistic on those grounds.
Well, are there? Kathleen Brooks is financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB and joins me now Do you share the governor's rosy outlook, Kathleen? Good morning. Chuckling,
good morning,
I fear
Nick.
Not, then. Good morning.
Do you know what? I think compared to where we were, absolutely. We are in a disinflation trend. Obviously not deflationary because inflation is still going up just at a lower pace than before.
Oh, I see. Right.
What I did think was very encouraging, though, is that the Bank of England had previously said that inflation would go back to their 2% target, around about 2%. In 2027. And yesterday, they think it will happen actually a lot sooner. So potentially in the first few months of 2026. Now that is real improvement, but we've still got structural problems with our inflation in this country. You know, everything from labour costs to energy prices, and prices for construction. Those things could really limit how low inflation will go. And I think, you know, that's why the Bank of England, although Andrew Bailey sounded incredibly optimistic in that quote that you pulled out yesterday, he was cautious in other parts of his interviews. So, you know, it's a tightly balanced thing.
Let me just put to you what the one newspaper, The Eye, is saying, that they're suggesting this could lead to a mortgage price war with rates dropping as low as 3%. Again, would you subscribe to that view?
I mean, I think it's a very competitive mortgage space and there's lots of players in that market. So they are trying to fight for customers. The one thing that's really interesting about 3%, I think that's a little bit too optimistic because...
Where are we currently? Sorry,
currently at 3.75% as of yesterday.
Sorry, mortgage rate. What typically, what would you get a mortgage for now? What sort of, do we know roughly?
It can be up to, you know, upwards of 4%.
Is it really?
At the moment.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, it can be upwards of 4%. So they are bringing them down. So, you know, it's way, way down from its peak back in, you know, 2023. But we have also seen the fact that the financial markets only expect one rate cut next year. So that would bring it down to 3.5%. So banks would essentially be really having to cut their own rates and their own potential interest income if they were to give it to 3%. But as I said, it is a competitive market. So some banks, some mortgage providers will actually sacrifice that in favour of the customers because it's a volume game at the end of the day.
Oh, I see. Okay. Workers' rights day, but are they on the right track? One business boss fears not. Kathleen?
Yeah, that's Alex Baldock, the CEO of Currys. Currys reported results, very good results actually yesterday, saw their share price go up by 10%. But their CEO did warn that he's concerned not only for the outlook for consumers, because he said, like, you know, our tax burden has gone up, but he also said that, you know, costs for the business and the employment rights bill will make it essentially unviable to have some workers in the retail industry. He's not the only one to say this, but what he did make out, which I thought was really interesting, was that he said that the profits of Currys' UK business would have been double if it wasn't for the increase in the national living wage and also national insurance over recent months and recent years. As it turns out, profits came in at 22 million. So that was up from last year. But it does show that, you know, all of these government policies, they need to be a balancing act. Of course, people want workers to be protected. But workers aren't protected if businesses can't or aren't incentivised to provide the jobs. So I think you made a good point on that.
Okay, let's go to other matters. And you're going to be able to possibly spend more on your bank card. And it's going to be set by each individual bank, is it, these new limits?
From March? Well, no, actually, it's going to be set by the individual cardholder.
By the card? Oh, my goodness.
By the cardholder, yes. Yeah, so the Financial Conduct Authority, so that's the, they kind of manage all the banks here, they're encouraging banks and card providers to allow the cardholders to set their own limits. So it's currently at £100.
Right.
So, you could spend any amount by just tapping your card. Now, it's worth noting that a lot of people now use their phones and you don't have a limit on your phone. So it's essentially bringing it to the same, evening the playing field there. But it's not actually particularly popular with people. Survey data suggests that people are fine with the £100 limit. And I think there's a lot of concern as well that it could encourage mindless spending potentially on credit cards and the like. So it's quite controversial. And to think back in 2007, Nick, the limit was £10 when this was introduced.
Lastly, who's seen their pay driven up to just shy of £1 million?
Oh, yeah, that would be the boss of Motability. His pay package rose by a quarter last year. Obviously, it's an incredibly controversial business because, it allows benefit claimants to lease cars and it was found to be very generously subsidised by the taxpayer. They also, this expose from the FT came out at the same time as they released their results for the year. And in the past year, the company's earned £3 billion from taxpayers, which is half of all their revenues. Total customer numbers also rose by 75,000 to 815,000 in the past year. And of course, the government actually sets the criteria for who uses the scheme. So I think this is going to be quite controversial.
Yes, I do. I agree with you. Kathleen, enjoy your weekend. Kathleen Brooks is financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB. Thank you for that. John's in Cowbridge to talk about the delay to local elections. John, what do you want to say? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'd just like to ask the question. I think there's some established protocol here, because if you remember, in 2019, we held elections for the Parliament of the EU.
Right.
Having had the Brexit vote in 2016, and we knew when we elected those members to the EU that they were only there for about 18 months. So I think there's established protocol in this field. I can't see why the government can't allow politicians to be elected for 12, 18 months, whatever period they need to, and then further elections be held once the new councils are established.
Come on, what do you think is going on here, John? Spell it out.
Well, I think both main parties, Nick, are absolutely convinced that they're going to lose an awful lot of members, but I don't think that should delay democracy. I think it should go ahead, and whatever the public think should be what the government have got to put up with.
John, have a good weekend. It is taxation without representation. Thank you for your views. We're speaking with a member of the government, and indeed in the next hour we're speaking with Sir James Cleverly as well, senior representatives of both these parties, the traditional parties, if you will, Labour and Conservatives, running scared of the challenger parties, the Lib Dems and Reform. We'll put those claims. Pat, you'll be the next caller on that in just a moment. But let's come back to the subject of money and the suggestion the government could be getting closer to getting back some of the money from so-called Baroness Brar or Michelle Moan. LBC's political editor, Natasha Glass, in the studio with me now with more details. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, at first, actually looks like a little bit of a setback. So the company, which was once run by Baroness Moan, she sold the NHS millions of pounds worth of PPE during the pandemic. It's now going into liquidation. So it owes the government almost £150 million for supplying that unusable PPE. The government have been trying valiantly to secure some of that cash back. Nick, I've been told the government have not given up on that fight.
That's what Wes Streeting was saying yesterday, wasn't it?
Exactly. He has been saying that. And you grilled the Health Secretary on what he was doing to recover that money on Call the Cabinet last month.
There were people who were going out to work, putting themselves in harm's way against the deadly virus for which there was no vaccine, no treatment at the time. That kind of selfless action to try and help our country through stands in stark contrast to people who saw an opportunity.
Your resolve is as hard as determined as ever.
Absolutely.
To get this cash back.
I think it's disgraceful.
That.
And honestly, Baroness Moan, I mean, the clue's in the title, a member of the House of Lords, no less. She shouldn't need to be dragged through the courts. She should do the right thing and pay that money back.
Now, Nick, as we know, she was ordered by the court. She had an October deadline to pay some of that money back, but that did not happen. Now, Baroness Moan apologised for lying about her initial involvement. She initially denied that her and her husband were involved in this. This is her speaking to the BBC back in 2023 and admitting they had made millions of pounds in profit.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing. I wasn't trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes, and I regret and I'm sorry for not saying straight out, yes, I am involved.
The two contracts in total came to a value of £202 million. And, you know, MedPro made a return on its investment of about, realistically, about 30%.
So about £60 million?
Yeah, about that, yeah.
That was her speaking with her husband, Doug Barrowman. Now, yesterday, Nick, the Department for Health and Social Care applied for PPE Medro, the firm, to be wound up at the High Court. They argued the company was hopelessly insolvent and should not continue in administration. So, basically, they've got no money left. But instead of the company applying their own liquidators, Nick, I'm told what will happen now is that they will appoint what's called an official receiver. And they have far, far more powers than the liquidators. So they could look at whether the firm could make any payments towards that debt. They could investigate their conduct personally. They could look at the financial affairs before and after the bankruptcy. They can interview her. They can interview her husband. So essentially, they have far stronger investigative powers and could actually do more damage to the firm and to the directors in the long run. If any misconduct is found to have taken place, they could face personal liability for some of the company's debts. They can seize assets. They can disqualify them from ever being able to own a company again. And in extreme cases, and I'm sure some people will want to see this, criminal prosecutions. They can assist in that too. Now, of course, there's no guarantee of that happening. meaning many people think that the government are never going to get this money back. The government's lawyers are staying very quiet about exactly what they're going to do. They're trying to obviously keep the element of surprise. But you heard it exactly there from Wes Streeting, the government not giving up their fight just yet.
LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting 7:43. Pat is in Stafford to talk about democracy denied. Pat, your reaction to that. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I am absolutely seething to think that this government can stoop so low as to stop people from voting. Democracy has gone, well, it's just gone through the window, hasn't it?
I fear it,
it is now up to the king to recognise what is going on, step in, and do something about it, dissolve Parliament.
Yes.
We cannot put up with this. The whole lot of them, they are corrupt.
You're absolutely convinced of the reason they're doing this, Pat?
Oh, it's absolutely. It's so blatant that they are so frightened of. They know they will lose. What? They know they will be out.
What do you
think? And Starmer is so weak.
Right. What do you think the Conservatives should do?
Well, I don't think for a moment they're going to do anything, because I'm sure they're in cahoots with them. They're both frightened. Both parties are frightened.
Yeah.
And we cannot. We've been putting up with this now since the Blair government.
Pat, thank you. It's worth noting the Conservatives are the largest party in 14 of the local authorities. So we'll be asking Sir James Cleverly whether they intend to ask for those delays that are available. Pat, thanks for your view. Natasha's in Cyprus on holiday, but you want your say on this. Natasha, your view. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. No, I live here.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It says it's on holiday here. I'll find out how we managed to get that wrong. You live there now. Right. Okay.
Yes,
so you wouldn't have had a vote in Cyprus, in all honesty.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have had a vote in Cyprus. What do you make of events that are going on back here as regards to the local elections?
Oh, just seething. I'm staggered. This isn't front page news every day, just to kind of highlight the issue. I mean, we're quite happy to hold other countries to account when they withhold their elections or have corrupt elections, and we're doing exactly the same here. It's absolutely disgraceful.
As one of my contributors said, Natasha, if this was a few years ago where you heard no elections for 7 years, you'd probably hear the Foreign Secretary shouting and screaming about it, but we just allow it to happen in the UK.
100%! You've had David Lammy bleaching his head off on LBC. He's absolutely. Also, I can't believe his expenses. That's another story that's got me seething this morning as well, with paying his tax, using our public funds to pay his taxes. Absolutely disgraceful. And the other thing they're doing is gerrymandering the vote by letting 16-year-olds vote. I think they're going to let European Union people have the vote when they start coming into the country as well. They're totally gerrymandering the vote. It's disgraceful, and he needs to be held account for it.
Natasha, thank you for your input. Have a good one in Cyprus. Coming up after the news, the Prime Minister hails the introduction of new rights for working people, and we'll hear more on that. 7:46 LBC News headlines now. Thomas Watts.
European Union leaders have agreed a loan for Ukraine to help fund its war effort and economic needs for the next 2 years. The government has quietly dropped a target to reduce the rate of premature births in the UK. And Australia's announced a national gun buyback scheme in the wake of the Bondi terror attack. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for most, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are queues on the M4 going into town. It's partly blocked because of an accident between Heston Services and Junction 2 for Brentford. There are queues in Peckham. The A2, the Old Kent Road westbound, is blocked. That's because of an accident between the Canal Bridge interchange and Glengall Road. There are queues in Barnes. The Terrace is blocked both ways because of an accident between White Hart Lane and the High Street. It's heavy in Southgate. Osage Lane eastbound is blocked because of an accident between Manor Drive and Chase Side. There's only one Woolwich Ferry running. That's because of technical problems. On the trains, C2C have delays up to half an hour and some cancellations between Fenchurch Street and Grays. That's because of problems with the signals at Barking. It also means that on London Overground, there's no service on the Suffragette line between Barking and Barking Riverside.
This is LBC.
'Twas Christmas, and Puss was in Boots for some beauty must-haves. With amazing new launches from Sol de Janeiro, Laneige, Beauty of Joseon, Shark Beauty, and many more, Puss left with the most perfect gifts. Shop the brands everyone's talking about. Gift happily ever after. Boots. Selected stores and online while stocks last.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
This could be the best Christmas ever. Christmas Cash Call is here with a life-changing £500,000 to be won. Enter this week's draw before 5pm today and you could get a call with £500,000. Christmas Cash Call. Text radio to 822 00 to enter now. Text costs £2.50 plus your standard network charge. 18 plus UK only global network competition. Full rules and free entry at christmascashcall.com.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done, and I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
10 minutes for eight. We'll come back to our conversation concerning those elections in a moment. Now, it's Workers' Rights Day today, and writing in one newspaper, the Daily Mirror, the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, says the legislation, and I quote, will make life better for hard-working Brits, who are the backbone of our nation and our economy. Going on to say, more than 15 million people across the UK will benefit from new protections under these laws. And here to explain more is Sir Chris Bright, Minister for Trade, joining me now. OK, can you spell out in detail how is it that workers' lives have improved today, Sir Chris? Good morning to you.
Good morning, St Nick. How are you? Okay.
I'm well, thank you.
Good.
I love the idea of St. Nick. That was rather clever, Sir Chris.
Well, it's your time of the year, isn't
almost,
it? It's St. Nicholas, yes.
Thank you.
I can just see you with it in a big red coat and a doling out presents.
I am available for hire. If there's any parties you need in Rhondda or Ogmore, I can be made available.
And you're not exactly cheap, are you?
No, I'm not. You got that right.
Now, look, the Employment Rights Act, which has come into force. So most things start on the 1st of April next year.
Yep.
So we have parental leave which is unpaid, and but paternity leave that starts on day one from April next year, and likewise, getting rid of the 3 day window that you used to have to start sick pay, that starts in April next year. Some other measures we're going to roll out over a couple of years, because one of the things I'm really pleased about the way we ended up with the final version of the bill, which is now an act, is that we were able to sit down round the table with businesses and with trade unions and government and put together a package that really works for everybody together. So, for instance, as you know, one of the things lots of people use zero-hours contracts. That works for some people, but sometimes it becomes exploitative. We said in our manifesto we would get rid of exploitative zero-hours contracts. Over the next 2 years, after April next year, we'll be working with businesses to make sure that we have a package that works for ending exploitative zero-hours contracts. Similarly, we want to get rid of fire and rehire. It just seems manifestly unfair that one day you're employed by somebody, you're fired, and then the next day you're rehired on worse terms and conditions. That seems manifestly unfair. Again, we're going to be working with businesses and trade unions to make sure that we get that package right over the next 2 years. But you're right, I think it's a fair set of proposals which will give the biggest uplift for workers' rights in a generation. 15.1 million people around the country. And I would just say, I know, Nick, you're breathing in because you're about to offer some criticism of this. But I would say that I know there's a version of this world where you pit workers against the bosses. I just don't think that works. I think the best, strongest economic success comes when you manage to get workers and business leaders around a table together and you build economic success.
So, Chris, you've mentioned exploitative zero contract. So what makes a zero contract acceptable or exploitative? Where is the distinction?
Well, just as a for instance, let's say you, you've been doing effectively 30 hours every week for 20 weeks and still your boss won't give you a proper contract. That looks like an exploitative 0 hours contract to me. We're going to work through the details of precisely how you would define that, but that's one example, and there are others that people might be able to come up to it. And if you want not to be on a 0 hours contract, you want a proper contract, I think you should have a right to be able to say, I want a contract. I want to know whether I'm going to be doing one shift next week or 10 shifts next week so that I can actually put food on the table for my kids and pay a mortgage.
Although major employers might think differently, Minister, you're probably aware the Currys boss, Alex Baldock, says the harder, riskier and more expensive you make it to employ people, the fewer people will be employed. He's joined in that sentiment by the next boss, Simon Wolfson. Between them, they employ 56,000 people. Why are you and your colleagues right and these bosses wrong?
That's why I think it's right that we come to a compromise. Look, there's a balancing act that you have to achieve here. Of course, you don't want to enforce such a burdensome regime on business that they simply can't prosper. But I think this is a sensible set of measures. If you ask most ordinary people in the street, do you think a business should be able to employ you one day, fire you that evening and rehire you the next day on worse terms and conditions, they go, no, that's manifestly unfair. And I think if we have a country which is just a little bit fairer, we'll probably have a country which is a bit more at ease with itself and more able to prosper economically. And we've had some good news. I don't want to overstate this, but we've had some good news this week. Interest rates coming down. That's the sixth time since we came to power. That's good news. More money in people's pockets.
That decision is taken by the Bank of England, Minister.
It is, but it's happened on our watch. And as you know, you've been just as critical as I have of what happened after the Liz Truss budget when interest rates went up so dramatically and so fast, and that provided real problems for lots of people's families. We've been able to put some financial support to some that most need it for their energy bills, including for industries that are very dependent on that.
Talk about economic indicators, Minister, unemployment went up to 5.1%, and coming back to this new legislation, the Retail Jobs Alliance is suggesting, and they act for companies such as Marks and Spencers and Tesco, your measures could mean 300,000 retail jobs are lost over the next 3 years. So they equally are wrong. So we've got the bosses wrong and we've got the Retail Jobs Alliance wrong, do we, Minister?
No. I think it's something like 300,000 more people in work this year than a year ago, which is good news. And inflation, of course, down more than was anticipated this week. Also good. I don't want to hide the fact that lots of people are struggling financially. I've got people in my own patch. You referred to it earlier in Rother and Ogmore who, you know, there'll be heroes and heroines who are doing two or three jobs just to make sure that they can put enough food on the table for their kids, which is why it's so important that we have a national minimum wage and that that's paid at a proper proper way, and that you have proper security in work, because I think that that leads to better outcomes.
All right. While I have the benefit of you on the line, just a couple of other things. Can you confirm that some local elections are going to be delayed further, Minister?
So we're doing, the straight answer is yes, and then I'm going to do the but that follows on to explain it. I don't want to run away from a straight answer to a straight question, which is to say that we are doing a massive reorganisation of local authorities. You will know that there are lots of places in the UK, doesn't apply in London actually, but in lots of places in the UK where you have a district council and you have a county council, and some people don't know which bit does the potholes and which bit does the major roads and which does the schools and which does social care and so on. So we're reorganising that to have unitary authorities. And we're asking some of those authorities, which are going to come into existence in 18 months' time, but does it really make sense to have elections next year for people who will only be in post for a single year?
Well, why did no one tell your good friend Steve Reid? On Tuesday, he said this.
Will he update us on whether council elections are going ahead or not, or will he cancel more at the last minute?
He asked about the elections that are scheduled to go ahead. They will be going ahead.
That was local government minister on Tuesday. Why did no one tell your mate Steve?
I have no idea. I wasn't in the chamber. Sorry, look, you're enjoying that far too much, Saint Nick.
Can I put it to you, Sir Chris? This is taxation without representation. You are, and you'll remember this word, you and your government are running frit.
No. I know what you're doing with the American Revolution and all that, but it's a very simple thing.
You keep saying look, and I'm looking, and I cannot see justification. We managed to fight
it's
a world
simple.
War. We managed
Nicholas.
To fight and win a world war in fewer years than it takes to reorganise Hampshire District Council. What is going on, sir?
We also delayed elections during the Second World War, as you know.
Yes.
But the bigger point here is, look, it's simple. We are reorganising local government. It will save money. We're putting £78 billion into local authorities because I think people want to make sure that the potholes get mended and that there's proper support for Nan when she needs to go into a care home. If we're going to be creating new local authorities, does it make any sense to have a round of elections in areas where the people elected would only be in post for a single year? I think if you ask local people, they probably go,
local people want to vote. So, Minister, local people have been calling me and saying they want to vote and they feel they're being denied.
Local people have been calling you?
Yeah, people in counties such as Hampshire, where else was it, Norfolk and elsewhere, are saying they want the chance to vote and they say you're denying it. In fact, you're denying democracy.
We're not denying democracy. If the local authorities come back to us, and I don't know what the mix of local authority control is in those areas, whether they're no overall control or whatever they may be, if people come back to us and say, no, we want to proceed with the elections, then I'm guessing that that's what we'll do. But there is a logical argument which says we're reorganising all of this. You would be electing people for a single year. Does that make any kind of sense?
Right.
That's the only question that we're asking.
Right.
I know you can stir up the anxiety pot if you want.
What a suggestion. Lastly,
it's your favourite thing, isn't it?
Lastly, two years ago, who said country first, party second? That would be Sir Keir Starmer. What's happened to that? He's running scared of the party now. He knows they'll take an absolute kicking, Minister.
No, complete and utter...
Nonsense.
Thank you very much. Balderdash. Let's go for balderdash.
That was closer to the original word, I think.
Dickensian Christmas kind of word. I'd be really happy when next May. Yeah. And there will be lots of elections across the whole of the UK, including, as you know, I'm a Welsh MP, we'll be having elections for the Welsh Senate. There will be elections. People will be able to go and express their opinions. It will be just a few days after the Employment Rights Act comes into force, which is really good news. I think we are doing some of the most important things that needed to happen in this country, not just reorganising local government. Right. Well, earlier on this week, I managed to get a new trade deal with Korea. That is really good for British businesses able to export around the world. That's the fourth trade deal we've done this year. We've got, as I said earlier, inflation come down more than we anticipated. We still got work to do on that. We managed to save 500 jobs in Grangemouth earlier on this week, but with a deal, right, again, where we're working with private business and unions and government.
400
together.
Jobs had been lost in Grangemouth prior to that, but I hear what you're saying. Good news about any trade deal. May I take this opportunity to wish you a happy Christmas. I doubt I'll speak to you beforehand, so thank you for your time and your appearances on the show through the year. Trade Minister Chris Bryan, appearing here on LBC, taking us 2 minutes after 8. Let's get the headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, European Union leaders have agreed to provide Ukraine with a loan to meet its military and economic needs for the next 2 years. They have struck a deal to give Kyiv 90 billion euros, but it'll be funded by borrowing and not frozen Russian assets. Belgium, where most of them are held, objected to that funding plan. Mark Leahy, a former NATO spokesman, says Kyiv needs the money very badly.
Russia's on a war economy and there's still a disparity. The US has pulled the plug on its spending. Ukraine's actually doing a pretty amazing job at converting its defence industry, but it's running out of money.
LBC has learned a target aimed at reducing premature births in England has been dropped. A goal to reduce the proportion of preterm births by a quarter was introduced under the Conservative government 8 years ago. The Department of Health says it remains determined to transform maternity and neonatal services. Australia is to open a new gun buyback scheme in response to the Bondi terror attack. Both federal and state authorities are bringing in new measures after 15 people were killed at a Hanukkah event on Sunday. The Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says it'll be the biggest such program in 30 years.
The terrible events at Bondi show we need to get more guns off our streets. We know that one of these terrorists held a firearm license and had six guns, in spite of living in the middle of Sydney suburbs there at Bonnyrigg. There's no reason why someone in that situation needed that many guns.
The US Department of Justice is expected to release the so-called Epstein files later. It follows the publication of another batch of photographs from the paedophile financier's estate. Government borrowing was higher than expected last month. Official figures show it stood at £11.7 billion, ahead of forecast, but lower than in the same month in 2024. And Australia have pulled further ahead in the third Ashes test in Adelaide. The hosts reached the close of play on 271-4 in their second innings, leading England by 356 runs. Travis Head is 142 not out. In the city, the FTSE 100 is just reopening at 98.37. It closed up 63 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, a day of sunny spells and scattered showers, the driest conditions in the south and east, the rain most frequent in the north and west, a high of 11 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Come in. Shoes off.
What's the Wi-Fi?
Have I seen the new series I'm binging?
Please, can we listen to something that isn't Christmas music?
Can you search how to defrost a turkey quickly?
Everyone, we're going to video call Auntie Audrey now.
Mom, Joe's talking to telly again.
Can we share a video of the dog in his outfit?
Hosting this Christmas? You need the UK's best broadband technology. EE does more.
Full fibre is the UK's most reliable broadband technology. Ofcom's broadband terminology research, March 2023. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
25 minutes after 8 on Friday, the 19th of December. Stop bashing British boys. They don't need misogyny lessons. The migrants are the ones who do. So says Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch. We'll look in more detail at those comments. Try and work out what it is exactly that she's saying. Meanwhile, in other news, as we come to the end of Hanukkah celebrations, and I put that word in quotes, Sir Stephen Watson, who's Chief Constable of Greater Manchester Police, was at an event in London yesterday talking about calls he receives from young Jewish girls.
A group of 10-year-old girls wanting to go to a Hanukkah party where they should be, frankly, interested in balloons and bicycles are making a request for armed police officers.
Armed police officers to take 10-year-old girls to religious parties. That's what parts of Britain have come to. Meanwhile, Sir Stephen is, of course, Greater Manchester, along with the Metropolitan Police now. You cannot use the word, or words, globalise intifada, but other forces so far not following suit. So you can't say it in Westminster, but you can in Windsor. Can someone explain that to me? In other news?
The government has quietly dropped a target to reduce the rate of premature births by a quarter. I'm LBC's Helen Hodnott with the exclusive.
And we'll come back to our conversation about workers' rights. The government are saying it's the right way. Bosses are saying it's not. So who is right on workers' rights?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As I mentioned earlier, Sir Keir Starmer is writing in today's Daily Mirror about workers' rights. Meanwhile, Kemi Badenoch, the leader of the Conservative Party, is writing in today's Daily Telegraph, and a very punchy piece it is too. She says that Labour's plans to teach schoolboys to respect women and girls is a complete distraction from the real issue. She also says British boys don't need misogyny lessons, migrants do. There's one particular piece in the one particular part of the article, and I quote directly, "If you tell boys they are the problem, you create resentment and risk radicalising the very people you claim to be helping. If we are to halt the surge in misogyny, we start enforcing the law with more police on our streets." She goes on, "Let's also stop pretending that all cultures treat women equally. They don't. We need to crack down on immigration from cultures that don't respect women and deport foreign criminals as soon as they commit crimes. No ifs, no buts. Continuing, lecturing boys about respect is an attempt to change the subject. The government don't have the backbone to do what's right. Now, oh, for the opportunity to ask her which cultures perhaps she's referring to, but are these the recent arrivals we've seen from countries such as Afghanistan, people from Pakistan, people from Ethiopia? What is it? Now, you might remember earlier this year when the hit show Adolescence was released on Netflix, sparked a national conversation on the problem of online misogyny, particularly in young boys. And in April, I had the opportunity to speak to Kemi Badenoch, and I asked her whether she'd seen the programme and what she thought of the serious issues that it brought to light.
I haven't watched it. I don't have time to watch anything these days, to be honest. But I have read about it.
The Prime Minister had time to watch it, Mrs. Badenoch.
Yes, well they have. And so what I understand is that this is a fictional representation of a story that is actually quite different. I'm not going to watch every single thing that everybody's watching on Netflix. I do know what they're watching, and I know what it's about. And I've given a view that it is a work of fiction that is interesting, that touches on a problem in society. But there are bigger problems, such as Islamic terrorism and that kind of radicalization. And the story which it is based on has been fundamentally changed. And so creating policy on a work of fiction rather than on reality is the real issue.
And that conversation from April still featured yesterday as the government announced their strategy on tackling violence against women and girls. Kemi Badenoch spoke with reporters and argued again, watching adolescence is not the correct way to inform government policy.
The fact is, it's not 11-year-old boys in school who are perpetrating violence against women and girls. This is happening because some people in Labour watched Adolescence, and that's what they want to focus on. It's a complete distraction. They need to do the right thing, put police officers on the street, stop people who come from cultures that don't respect women coming into our country, foreign criminals removed as soon as they commit crimes. Those are the sorts of things that will make a difference.
Let's bring into the conversation Christina Odone, who's founder of the Parenting Circle charity, wrote a piece for The Spectator earlier this year concerning the movie, concerning the show Adolescence, not a movie, my apologies, the show, showing adolescence in schools, lets parents off the hook. Let's start, as it were, at the very beginning, the legislation that was mentioned by the Prime Minister and his colleagues, this week. Are you in support of it? Good morning.
Oh, broadly, very much. There is a huge issue, Nick, of violence against women and girls. And when one in four young women talk about strangulation being part of their, sexual relationships as a matter of course, that's terrible. And where we can bring in adolescence is to show how dangerous this online world is, that children as young as nine, according to the Children's Commissioner's survey, are watching porn, violent porn, as if this is how you conduct everyday relationships. So adolescence had a role to play. It really brought home how dangerous the online world is, because I did watch it, unlike Kemi, and I saw a young 14-year-old killing a classmate because she had said he was unattractive. And he had been whipped up by his online watching to consider sexual attractiveness, age 14, as the most important thing in the world, and B, to think violence was acceptable.
Christina, when Mrs. Badenoch writes, sorry to interrupt you, let's also stop pretending that all cultures treat women equally. They don't. Is she right?
Absolutely, she's right. We know that there are all kinds of religious courts that are trying to be established across Britain, representing different religious authorities. And we know that women are unlikely to get a fair hearing in those courts. So she is absolutely right that there are cultures where the man's role is seen as one of authority over the woman in his life. So she's right about that.
Christina, but how will we know if this new initiative is working?
Well, we need a stop in terms. We need to know that relationships are not governed by strangulation, sexual stalking, naked videos. And, wouldn't that be a great solution? But I think that what we are really worried about is a government that says teachers are supposed to be now in charge of how our children act in their relationships, and completely letting off, letting parents off the hook.
Christina, I will leave it there. Thank you for your time. Wish you a happy Christmas. Haven't spoken to you for a while. I trust all is well. Christina Adoni, your founder of the Parenting Circle charity. Good to hear from you again. 13 after 8. Listening to that, Michael Conroy, who's director of Men at Work. It's a training company. What do you train in, Mr. Conroy? Good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me, Nick. I train teachers, youth workers, social workers, anybody who works with boys and young men to have constructive dialogues with them about their well-being and what the world wants them to be, what they're consuming online and what they're sulking up in general. And that is directly relevant to, I think, first, their safeguarding, and secondly, the well-being of women and girls.
What do you make of this proposed legislation? It's very much at your coalface, isn't it?
It's very much at my coalface, so it's kind of interesting that only yesterday I actually saw what was in it, but I think I'm not alone in that.
Right.
I read between the lines, eh?
Yes,
you don't need to.
Indeed. Is it going to work?
I would like to extract every single career politician from this discussion and go and put them in a park somewhere so they can have a picnic and do something that doesn't affect this in reality. Because whether it's Tory, Labour, whichever, I have no faith in any of them at all. This work is really sensitive, really important, and it's far too important to be reduced to silly sound bites like teacher misogyny or whatever it might be, boys must be targeted. That I really, really believe in the work of supporting boys and young men to take time to think through the messages that they're being relentlessly given by an online world that doesn't give a damn about their well-being or the well-being of women and girls, and kind of twists those things together so that if we're telling our boys, which the algorithms are, that a successful man is what? He's physically dominant, he's got loads of money. We don't know where the money comes from, but that's not the important part. He has lots of girlfriends and he doesn't really, you know, care about them, and caring about other people is a sign of weakness. I mean, what is this propaganda? It's poison.
Let me ask you lastly the comment Mrs. Badenoch makes. Let's also stop pretending all cultures treat women equally. They don't. Would you concur?
Even within a village, there are multiple cultures and ways of seeing women, even within extended families. So I know what she's doing. She's just basically is red meat to racist vultures. I mean, I totally get it. But all cultures are different, of course. That's what makes them cultures. But the idea that...
Is that not relevant in this context, you think?
It is, if the idea that only recent incomers require some kind of corrective work around their views of women is flatly nonsense.
Okay, grateful for your time. I have to leave it there because we have headlines to get to. Thank you, Michael Conroy, director of the training company Men at Work. I'll read that quote for a third time. Let's also stop pretending all cultures treat women equally. They don't. We need to crack down on immigration from cultures that don't respect women. She's right on that, isn't she? She's spot on, Kemi Badenoch. We'll take your views after the 8:16 LBC News headlines. Read by Thomas Watts.
European Union leaders have agreed to provide Ukraine with a loan of 90 billion euros. Speaking to Nick, a minister's rejected claims the government is denying democracy by delaying some elections, and Australia is to open a gun buyback scheme in response to the Bondi attack. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The queue's on the M4 going into town. It's partly blocked between Heston Services and Junction 2 for Brentford because of an accident. In Peckham, the A2, the Old Kent Road, is blocked going into town between the Canal Bridge Interchange and Glengall Road because of an accident, so there are long delays. There are queues in Dartford on the A2 eastbound. It's down to one lane before the M25 at the Darrenth Interchange because a car's caught fire. In Barnes, the Terrace is blocked in both directions between White Hart Lane and the High Street. That's because of an accident, so there are queues. It's slow in Southgate. Osage Lane is blocked in both directions between Manor Drive and Chase Side. That's because of an accident. And on the train, C2C have delays of up to 20 minutes and also some cancellations between Fenchurch Street and Grays after problems with the signals earlier.
This is LBC.
Come in. Shoes off.
What's the Wi-Fi?
Am I streaming the new series I'm binging?
Please, can we listen to something that isn't Christmas music?
Can you, search how to defrost a turkey quickly?
Everyone, we're going to video call Auntie Audrey now.
Mom, Joe's talking to telly again.
Can we share a video of the dog in his outfit?
Hosting this Christmas? You need the UK's best broadband technology. EE does more.
Full fibre is the UK's most reliable broadband technology. Ofcom's broadband terminology research, March 2023. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at two. We said three. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after it, let's get your voices and your views on the radio about what Kemi Badenoch is saying in that newspaper article today. Ruth in Barnstaple. Ruth, your take on that. Good morning.
Good morning.
What are you going to tell me? Ruth, can you go ahead?
Yep. I just wanted to say that I've been working with very young children for 35 years as a teacher and an educational psychologist.
Okay. What sort of ages of children, Ruth?
From 2 to 6-year-olds.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I have seen in the last 10 years a real change in the approach that mothers have to their sons compared to their daughters. It's very much more like an Asian culture where women don't feel like they can discipline their sons. Young lads are learning from a very young age how to manipulate and control their mothers, whereas young girls seem to have to do as they're told and respect their mothers.
And are you saying this is predominantly... No, I have to ask you a question, Ruth. Are these predominantly Asian children, then, you're talking about?
No, not at all. These are white British. In the area that I work in,
right,
it's predominantly white British.
Right.
And these...
I think we've got a problem with this line, haven't we? Ruth? She's making some fairly controversial claims. We need to get on a secure line because we can't just let her. And I'm very sorry, Ruth, but I've got to get you on a proper line because some of the things you're saying are going to attract a lot of criticism and comment, and I need to try and work out exactly what it is you're trying to get across me. Please put the phone down. We'll try and get you again, 8:21. Natalie's in Wembley. Let's try better here. Natalie, you're on the radio. What can you tell me? Good morning.
Oh, hello.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that I think Keir Starmer's taking a very narrow focus when he just talks about young people in school. There's violence against women and girls at a societal level. There's, you know, been news reports about women being attacked on university campuses and universities not doing anything about it, in the army. And also at state level, the family courts have come under a lot of attacks for their, how they treat women, WASPI women policies.
Yes.
Do you think this
proposed changes and the idea of these classes for 10-year-old boys, what will the impact have, do you think, Natalie?
I think it may alienate some boys, and it's not going to do a lot of good because it's only taking a very small fragment of the problem.
And is it, as Kemi Badenoch says, if you tell boys they're the problem, you risk radicalising the very people you claim to be helping? Again, is she correct when she says that?
I think there is an element of truth in it.
All right. Natalie, thank you. Let's try Ruth in Barnstaple. Ruth, you're saying this is a culture that you think is predominantly white children you work with, but it has an Asian culture. Is that what you're trying to say, Ruth?
I'm just saying from experience from Asian cultures, many women don't feel like they can discipline their young boys. And now we're very much seeing it in this culture where women are treating their young sons very differently to the way they treat their daughters and how they discipline them. So I see a lot of young boys learning from a very young age how to manipulate and control their mothers, then growing up to have no respect for their mothers, then their female teachers, and therefore it goes forward. We also need to really educate our young girls and women in this country that this is not acceptable. And I also work with teenage girls who think it's so normal now to be touched by a man on the bus 6 times when they're traveling a day. Happening, and that their friends have been raped or sexually abused, but it's so normal because all of their friends have experienced it. And this whole culture that what women are accepting and what women view as normality now, it's a conversation that we need to educate not only our men, but also our women.
And lastly, the age of children you work with, real youngsters, how is it to be tackled at that age group, would you say, Ruth?
Women really, really need to be educated on that this is not acceptable from young boys.
Grateful for your input. Glad we got you on a better line. Have a good weekend. Thank you. Reese says, now the government seems to be making up policy based on fictional TV shows. I'm looking forward to see what they think of next. Can we expect a re-education policy to stop the Daleks being xenophobic as the next initiative? Laura says, your call is 100% correct, something feel we cannot say out loud. Same subject. David, if the government won't face the fact of cultural misogyny for fear of racism, teachers definitely won't stick their head above the parapet. Having a few misogyny lessons won't undo what a boy sees at home. More on that in a moment. Now, let's go to this plagued initiative in the world of military. The government pausing all testing of the Ajax armoured vehicle after another soldier was injured during safety trials. 3 separate investigations are now being conducted after around 30 soldiers became ill from noise and vibration during training exercises earlier in the year. It is reported that to some extent some of these soldiers will never be able to serve again because of the injuries they sustained. At the very least, they would come out shaking and in some instances vomiting. Tom Cottrell, Acting Defence Editor at The Telegraph. It's a checkered history, the Ajax. Just briefly take the listeners back to where it began and where we find ourselves now, Tom. Morning.
Yeah, morning. So look, Ajax has been a complete debacle. You know, the project is 8 years behind schedule. It was initially meant to come out in 2017, but delays and delays and delays due to noise and vibration concerns have kind of rode it back to 2025. You know, we saw kind of early in the early days in 2020 these kind of initial reports of noise and vibration concerns coming out. You know, we had soldiers who were rattling in these 40-ton armoured vehicles. Some were suffering from damaged hearing, so they had 300 tests carried out for soldiers, and 17 of those soldiers suffered such damage to their hearing that, as you pointed out, it effectively ended their careers. So fast forward to where we are today. In November, Luke Pollard, the defence minister, he came out and celebrated the fact that Ajax had reached what they call initial operational capability, which effectively means that, you know, 50 of these armoured vehicles were ready to go to war with fully trained crews. Now, he said, when I was speaking to him, that the safety concerns, they were well behind them. Ajax is now safe. 2 weeks after that comment, there was a massive war game on soldier planes, Exercise Iron Strike, in which 31 soldiers suffered and vibration symptoms. 31 soldiers, and crucially, riding in 23 of these Ajax vehicles. Now, there are only 60 or so that were going. So a third of these vehicles saw 31 soldiers injured. So immediately the whole program was paused and put in a hiatus. So we had 3 separate safety investigations that were launched into this. And then, you know, only yesterday we hear that another soldier in a completely separate trial, not on one of these 23 Ajax that were involved and being probed, was also injured. I mean, the whole thing is an absolute debacle.
What happens next, Tom? Someone needs to grow a pair and cancel it, don't they?
Well, look, the Tories have said, and obviously Ajax came out whilst the Tories
were on their watch. Yeah, yeah.
They said in Parliament, James Cotton, Shadow Defence Secretary, look, we need to either fix it or fail it. Now, Labour have been fairly blunt in the comments they've suggested. They haven't ruled out entirely canning this programme. Bear in mind, this is £6.3 billion of the taxpayers' cash that will have gone into this armoured vehicle. So they're waiting for the results of these various safety investigations. That's when they'll take a decision. Now, that's likely going to be at some point in the new year. But look, there are a lot of calls from serving soldiers, from senior officials to scrap the programme, because at the end of the day, it seems there is something critically wrong with this fleet of vehicles that's injuring soldiers.
Thanks so much, Tom. Tom Cotterill, Acting Defence Editor at The Telegraph. Let's get to some of your social media texts that are coming in. We talked about the cancellation of local elections. Graham and Bushy reminds us Labour's slogan at the general election was change. We didn't know this included changing our democratic rights. Mike in Crawley says, a view from the trenches. After 15 years of austerity, I optimistically voted Labour. Their first unannounced action was more austerity, namely the removal of our winter fuel allowance. In the last year, both my wife and I have had more letters altering our tax status than we had in the previous 15 years. Currently, we allegedly owe around £1,300, a fair amount considering we're in receipt of no benefits whatsoever. All I hear now is wealth distribution from the elderly to the young, potentially increasing council taxes, further restriction on elderly drivers, and the fact that I may or may not have a local council. But if we do, I will not be able to vote until I'm 73, I have shortened that briefly, on the subject of what Kemi Badenoch is saying. And one of the earlier callers, Ruth, Abid Ashraf, says that caller is wrong if she thinks Asian mothers don't discipline their children. Asian discipline is hard. Those of us who grew it know it. It's nonsense to say that. Don't tarnish Asian parenting ways in this fashion. Do keep them coming. Ashish, I'm going to be talking to you about that after the news. I do hope you can hold, and others as well. Also after the news.
The government has quietly dropped a target to reduce the rate of premature births by a quarter. I'm LBC's Helen Hodnott with the exclusive.
It's 8:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. Newstime, Thomas Watts.
European Union leaders have agreed to provide a huge interest-free loan to Ukraine. The €90 billion, which should support Kiev for 2 years, will be funded by borrowing and not frozen Russian assets. LBC has learned ministers have quietly dropped a target to reduce premature births in England. A goal to reduce the proportion of preterm births by a quarter was introduced under the previous government in 2017. Australia's Prime Minister's announced a scheme to buy back people's guns in the wake of the Bondi terror attack. The scheme is one of a series of new control measures for firearms. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers, the driest conditions in the south and east, a high of 11 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
We're going to be talking about Susie Wiles, Trump's chief of staff, who's just given an explosive interview to Vanity Fair. But was it a mistake? And we'll be asking if the Tories are back from the dead.
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes. Or invite everyone round at 2. We said 3. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa. Or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friends, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Get Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
A better not blast to the government over this initiative, but is she right? Ashish in Croydon. What would you say, Ashish? Good morning.
She's partially right.
Whenever I see
these cases of whether it's people from Afghanistan, Syria, Egypt, whatever, in court for raping, sexually assaulting, harassing women in the UK, right? What you've got to realize is the thing that Kemi Badenoch misses is these people's views on Western women that needs to be raised and highlighted.
What do you? I just want to say for balance, of course, it's not an exclusively Asian thing. There are plenty of white people who are put on trial for sexual offences. But let's come back to the points that you're making, Ashish.
But these migrants who Kemi Badenoch refers to, they wouldn't dream, right, of raping or harassing women in Syria, Afghanistan, or wherever they come from, because you can just imagine what the police would do to them there. Yeah,
well, I would imagine they possibly could be beaten or have some hands chopped off or something, I would imagine.
Exactly. But when they come to the UK, okay, they think that they can have a free ride and start harassing and attacking women. And part of that reason is because, A, they feel that they'll get away with it, but B, more sinisterly, they have this low opinion of Western women.
How do you know this? I've obviously got to challenge you. How do you know this? Yeah. Why are you claiming this, Ashish?
I know this from experience, because they would not do that to women in their own countries.
How can you be so confident on saying that is what I'm asking,
okay,
sir.
Because by the law of logic, if this was a behavior that they do anyway, right, they would be doing this in their own countries. But their own countries do not have a history of this.
Okay, I'd like to ask you a question, and if you don't want to answer, you absolutely don't have to, but might I ask your country of origin?
Okay, I was born in the UK. My parents...
From where?
India.
Okay, and when you were a lad, 7, 8, 9, 10... Might I ask, who was the disciplinarian in your family setup? Was it mum or dad, or was it both?
It was mum's moaning. It was, you know, the moaning aspect really gets to certain people, and it was my mum who ruled the roost in the house. It was through the moaning that everyone just was kept under order.
Okay, and obviously you loved your mother, but did you respect her or fear her? What word would you use?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, we would fear her.
Okay.
Yeah, I would. I mean, you know, it was just the moaning. We just wanted the moaning to stop.
And would you say that's quite widespread with Asian boys? That when you mixed with some of your peers, they said, oh, yeah, it's mum, and I'm frightened of mum?
Yeah, because, you know, I wasn't allowed to, you know, do certain things for fear of what my mum would say.
So who,
it was always the fear of things getting back to my mum.
Okay. So did you have a male role model in your life?
Yeah. I mean, my dad was there, but he was pretty chilled out.
He
was a chilled out. He's been here since 59. He went to university and college here, and he's pretty modern. I mean, during Christmas, he's tipsy before even the Queen's speech has started. But then he insists on watching the late Queen's speech.
Yeah.
Even if we want to watch James Bond or whatever, no, we have to watch the speech.
Brilliant. Ashish, thank you for taking us back to your younger days. I know you had more to say, but so many people want to get involved. Have a good one. Thank you. Christine is in Chelmsford. Christine, what do you want to say on this conversation? Good morning.
Oh, hello. Good morning, Nick. Yes, I just wanted to say, our son, when he was 14, he always used to bully his sister.
How old was she?
She was 2 years younger than him.
Right.
So this is going on forever and ever. And she did have a mouth on her, and he used to say that she cuts me with words, and I'm just going to... But in the end, it's like you cannot behave like that. And
did he use to lamp her one then occasionally?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
All the time, regularly.
Oh, Lord. Oh,
but of course, this could carry on to other girls, couldn't it? It didn't, but it could have done. So,
well, what did you say to your son if he hit your daughter? What discipline might he be facing?
Oh, it'll just be standard parent. Don't do that.
Right.
Keep your hands to yourself. Da, 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 da.
Okay.
And then he got to about 14, 15, and he larruped her again.
Right.
And she was in tears, just, you know, all the time. And my husband pinned him up against the wall. Now, my husband's really laid back.
Right.
Will not raise his hands to a woman. He always said to me, he said, the day I hit you, it's over. And he never has, 35 years down the line.
No, not. Gosh, right, yes, OK.
Anyway, he pinned him up against the wall and he just said, I will absolutely batter you if I see you raise your hands again. You do not hit women, you do not hit your sister, you do not hit anybody like that.
Hmm.
And he scared the life out of him.
What happened then, subsequently, with your son?
Yeah, been a really good boy, and he's now met a beautiful wife that there was no way she would have put up with any of that.
No.
And they've got and he's a fabulous man. He's wonderful now.
I'm sure he is. So what do you take... are you suggesting these 10-year-old boys need to be pushed against the wall by a man and told, don't behave like that? How does that apply to the conversation we're having?
I just think they need a strong role model from a man in their life who knows how to behave.
How much is it a problem that research shows that there is a declining number of male teachers in primary schools, and a lot of male teachers are not attracted to primary education? How much is a factor might that be, do you think, Christine?
I don't know. It's really hard because when my children were little, there were lots of male primary school teachers.
Yep.
And they loved it. It was fabulous.
Yeah. Okay. I've got to ask, the relationship now between your son and your daughter, is it a good one now? They're adults.
It is, because they've both learned to recognise each other's qualities. And because the wife gets on really well
with
the daughter,
yeah.
And it's sort of like, no, she's really good, you know, I think you need to, you know, look at her good things, her good side,
yeah.
And it's sort of, but now they love each other, now they talk a couple of times a week, and,
oh,
God, I'm so glad I'm alive to see it.
Oh, that's good. Everyone coming around for Christmas, or what's the plan, Christine?
Yes, family gathering, which will be lovely.
Lovely. Enjoy. Christine, thank you, and thanks for all your comments. Best wishes to everybody. 8:39 the time. Kevin's in Doncaster. Kevin, what are you going to tell about Kemi Badenoch? Badenoch bites back. Morning. No, you've got to be listening to the radio. Don't do that, sir. David in Hampstead. Can someone have a word with Kevin? David in Hampstead, you're on the radio. Your view, David. Good morning.
Good morning. Great show.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I think I'm coming at this from a slightly different angle. I think, you know, men are probably one of the most demonised groups in society at the moment, because everything young boys particularly, everything they do and everything they don't do, they're told they're wrong. And then when they turn to what in America you call kind of incel culture, at the extreme end, there's a reason in many cases why this happens. Now, yes, obviously, I have to unfortunately caveat, obviously misogyny exists, et cetera, et cetera. However, people also forget the other facts. Men are far more likely to fall into depression. Men are far more likely to commit suicide. Men are far more likely to be victims of violent crime or to be killed by crime. All of these kinds of statistics, men are more likely to be incarcerated.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
And, you know, all of these things are true. Young boys have an incredibly tough time, and they're told the whole time, don't be manly, don't be masculine, don't be manly, don't be masculine. Then when something happens, and, for example, a woman, you know, God forbid, is attacked or something, the man steps in, well, someone's demonized, the man's demonized. Part of the problem we have at the moment, girls are being sexually harassed, they're being assaulted, etc., etc. The elephant in the room is in a disproportionate number of cases, these people are from, let's say, other cultures that do not share values that we have in this country.
Mm.
And having, you know, you grew up in this country, you're slightly older than I am,
right.
I grew up in this country, we go back as long as you like, the values of British men are very sound, very strong, very beautiful values. People look at this country, and people have over the past looked at this country and seen the men of this country who stood up for the values of the world. The problem is not men. The problem is that men are being demonized. And everything young boys do, they're demonized. And they're told they're wrong at every step of the way.
This will make it worse than I imagine, this proposal,
This will make it far worse. Imagine sitting down young boys who are already told everything you do is wrong.
Well, do you think that's fair? Do you think you're slightly over-egging it there a little bit to say everything you do is wrong? I mean, if that's your view, that's your view, but I think that might be slightly stretching it. No?
I mean, again, look at the statistics. Men have a very tough time. Okay,
yes.
I'm not saying women don't, but I shouldn't even have to caveat it with that. Men and young boys, I should actually specify, young boys growing up have a terribly tough time. They have the additional thing, the social media's around, et cetera, et cetera. But they have a crazily hard time growing up. And I say they are just told, essentially, don't be a man. And they are, in some cases, this might sound extreme, they're almost like emasculated. Like, you have to just be the same as a woman. Women and men are different. Women and men have
And have you experienced this?
Yes, I think every male in society probably in some way does. I mean, I'll tell you an experience of my own. I've stepped in when someone, a woman, has been harassed in a shop by someone, or I would say that she was harassed in a shop by someone, and I stepped in. She's being harassed by another woman, actually.
Right.
And she's being extremely rude to her. And I was called a misogynist. And I didn't hit anybody. I didn't do anything wrong. I essentially just told the other woman, go away, leave her alone. She doesn't want you near her. Go away.
Right. Okay. David, I will finish there, because so many people want to get involved. But thank you for that. Incel, of course, involuntary celibate, for those who don't know what that was that David was saying. Well, David, giving a very different approach, almost talking about the plight of men and young boys. Do you agree with David? John's in Luton. John, your view on what Mrs. Badenoch has said. Good morning.
Hello, morning.
Yes, sir.
Going back to what one of your earlier callers said in regards to how women, British women, are viewed from men from around the world, Britain has degraded the status of British women over the years, for many years, since the early 50s, from the likes of Benny Hill to them being shown as nothing but trophy wives, to the stage where women now start to do it themselves in regards to how they choose to present themselves in the world. That has not helped. It's multifaceted. You've got a situation now where men are no longer allowed to technically raise their sons. Effectively, is being solely done by...
I don't understand. I mean, that's not right, John, because when my marriage sadly went wrong, the boys stayed with me. So, I mean, that's just not true, sir.
When you look at it, men are almost excluded from raising their sons.
But I just... told you, you're talking to someone who did. Two of them.
From the time... Okay, so...
I mean, I'm not saying that's my exception.
You are the exception to the rule. When you've got a situation where men have been told for many years that the children would always go to the mother, when they can't join play groups because it makes other women feel uncomfortable, the way that men are excluded from joining the nursery profession to be carers for those children, where it's constantly... being women who are expected to raise those. But these are just...
Is this something you've experienced, John?
Pause.
Is this something...
No, because I've raised all of my children. What I'm saying...
So you've raised yours and I've raised mine. I don't know how you can hold your view, respectfully.
How many male teachers are there in nurseries? How many male teachers are there inside the primary schools? How many male teachers are there in general?
In primary schools, it is a growing concern among educationists. There are not enough male... I can't give you the number, but there are not enough male teachers. What do you think that causes, then, lastly, John? Oh, gosh, it's...
What that causes is you put that with soft parenting that's become such a great thing now over the last 20 years. So now you've got soft parenting where you can't use the word no,
right,
in case it upsets the child. You can't tell them that they shouldn't behave. You're not allowed to tell them how to behave.
All right. John, let's see what others make of those interesting views, and well done for raising your family. Coming up after the news, we go back to the idea that more than 10 million of you will be denied the vote of local elections. In some instances, you won't have had a vote in local councils for 7 years. We'll hear from the shadow housing, the Conservative, Sir James Cleverly, after the 8:45 LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
EU leaders have agreed to provide Ukraine with a €90 billion loan. LBC's learned ministers have quietly dropped a target to reduce premature births in England. And it's been confirmed the Foreign Office was the victim of a cyber attack in October. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's heavy on the M25 anti-clockwise. There's a lane closed on the exits that road to the M11 northbound at junction 27 because the car's broken down. On the M4, there are queues going into town after an accident earlier between Heston Services and junction 2 for Brentford. There are long delays in Peckham. The A2, the Old Kent Road westbound, stays closed. That's because of an accident between the Canal Bridge interchange and Glengall Roads. There are queues on the A2 eastbound after a car caught fire earlier before the M25 at the Darrenth interchange. There are queues in Barnes. The terrace is blocked in both directions because of an accident between White Hart Lane and the High Street. There are queues in Southgate. Osage Lane eastbound is closed before Chaseside. That's because of an accident. And on the train, C2C have delays of up to 20 minutes and cancellations between Fenchurch Street and Pitsea.
This is LBC.
At Morrison's, our fresh British Christmas veg is just 5p with your more card. That's just 5p for a kilo of carrots, 500 gram packs of parsnips or sprouts, or a whole swede. Morrison's, making more of Christmas. Majority of stores and online excludes Morrison's daily more card at required 18 plus without card, 62p to £1 max 6 of each per customer in store, max 2 of each online, ends 26th of December.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken. roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
With Lidl Plus, there's no need to stress to impress this Christmas. Get 15% off deluxe chilled party food, like golden prawn toasties with ponzu dip, scrumptious paella bites, and delicious vegetable dim sum. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, subject to availability. Selected stores, terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lbtv. Ends 31st of the 12th.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Gift more for less when you shop at the O2 this Christmas. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 of their favorite designer brands, including Nike, Tommy Hilfiger, Le Creuset, the Cosmetics Company store, and Lindt. Ticked everyone off your list. Start the festivities at one of our 30 bars and restaurants. Enjoy a movie or get competitive with bowling, climbing, interactive football, indoor skydiving, and more. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Just coming up on 10 minutes before 9. Now let's go back to the story with which, or the conversation with which we started the show, which was, for many of you, around 10 million in England, and the population of England is give or take around 55, 56 million, so it's a fair old chunk, would be denied local elections. In some instances, that means you won't have had a vote for some 7 years, or that's how it seems to be presenting itself. We spoke with senior members of both Reform and the Lib Dems, and indeed we heard from government ministers. Let's turn now of the Shadow Housing and Local Government Secretary, particularly relevant to the local government brief here, Sir James Cleverly, who joins me now. Sir James, I don't know, you probably weren't listening in the first hour, but it's fair to say many of my listeners are furious. They're talking that this is taxation without representation. It's democracy delayed, is democracy denied. And another caller pointing out, who was it who said country first, party second? It was Sir Keir Starmer about 2 years ago. The reaction of the Conservatives. Sir James, good morning.
Nick, good morning. We absolutely echo the frustration and anger that your listeners are displaying there. And I want to make it absolutely clear, the Conservative position is that these elections should go ahead. We were told last year by the government that there'd be a one-year delay in some elections because of a major reorganisation that the Labour government initiated. So they initiated the structural changes. They initiated the timetable. They started this process, and it was meant to be a one-off. We kept asking, are the elections in 2026 going to go ahead? And they kept saying yes. Up until 2 weeks ago, they were saying yes.
Up until Tuesday, the man you shadows confirmed they would go ahead, Sir James.
Exactly. And then suddenly, on Thursday, which was the last day that Parliament was sitting, which limits our ability to scrutinise the government on this, limits our ability to question the government on this, they tried to sneak out the fact that they were going to try and cancel these elections. As I say, the Conservative position, these elections should go ahead. Democracy relies on elections. And at a time of increased cynicism, it is totally counterproductive of the government to try and delay these elections again.
But one newspaper, The Times, hints at the fact that it might actually be quite helpful to the Conservatives because you have control of local authorities in places such as East Sussex, Essex, Norfolk, where you could take a kicking from Reform, which has also been echoed by my Reform representative. You can lay that to rest. That's absolute balderdash, is it, Sir James?
But you don't go into elections because you're guaranteed a win. That's not how democracy works. We went into the last general election knowing that we were going to have a really tough night, and unsurprisingly, we had a really, really tough night. And this is going to sound really weird, but being willing to be defeated at an election is perhaps as important, even more important, than winning. The peaceful transfer of power is what makes our democratic system so important. So we know that we're going to have a tough night in the local elections next year, but you do it nonetheless. And I've spoken with the leader of Essex. I've had messages back from the leader of Norfolk. They're intending to go ahead with their elections. I've not spoken to all my colleagues, but the message is clear.
Oh, that's interesting.
From Kemi, from me, and from the shadow ministerial team, these elections should go ahead. That's the message I'm getting back from my local government leaders, because they know what's happening here. Labour are running scared, and they're trying to shift the blame onto local council leaders. And that is unacceptable, and it's not going to happen.
All right. While I have the benefit of your online, a couple of other stories I could run past you, reminding my listeners, of course, you served as Home Secretary. You will probably know personally, Sir Stephen Watson, who's the Chief Constable of Greater Manchester. He gave a speech in London yesterday in which he said that 10-year-old Jewish girls have been asking for armed escorts to Hanukkah parties, when, of course, they should be just focusing on enjoying themselves as we come towards the end of Hanukkah. Sir James?
Well, this is heartbreaking, but sadly unsurprising. Both as Home Secretary and also my shadow communities portfolio, I speak regularly with faith groups, minority groups, including, of course, representatives of the Jewish community. There is a fear at the heart of the Jewish community, both after the appalling terrorist attacks and murders in Manchester earlier on this year, and, of course, since the brutal murders at Bondi Beach, the anti-Semitic murders at Bondi Beach. I was at a Hanukkah event in Parliament this week, and the fear is palpable.
Yeah.
And we mustn't underplay that. And we also have to recognise that we have a duty to ensure that all communities in the UK feel safe and secure. I increased the funding for the Community Security Trust, which is an organisation, Jewish organisation, that protects Jewish institutions, schools, places of faith. Very, very pleased that I was able to do that. But ultimately, there is still fear, and we need to address it. And we need to address it by recognising what is at the heart of this. And that is this multi-millennia-long hatred of Jews and Judaism. And that is what we need to break.
Finally, again, reminding listeners, you served as Foreign Secretary. European Union leaders are racing to secure a funding deal for Ukraine. There has been cast as a choice between money today or blood tomorrow. Belgium under rising pressure as it opposes a loan. Quick word on that, if I can get it from you, Sir James.
We have to continue our support for Ukraine. We have to send the message both to Moscow and everywhere else in the world that we don't run out of steam, that we don't throw our friends and allies under the bus just because this conflict has run on for years. We've got to stay strong. We've got to support the Ukrainians. And ultimately, we've got to make sure that Russia pays reparations to Ukraine after this war is finished.
Sir James, I won't see you, I imagine, before Christmas. Thanks for all your help through the year. Best wishes to you and the family. Have a happy Christmas. Sir James Cleverly, Shadow Housing and Local Government Secretary, speaking on behalf of the Conservatives. Interesting, laying to bed a line there was in one of the newspapers that it was on the Conservatives' interest, because let's be candid, and I think Sir James was pretty candid there as well, actually, in fairness to the man. He knows Essex is going to be tough. If reform is going to do well, I would have thought a county such as Essex is where they are going to hoover up, vacuum clean up the votes, whatever you call it. But they say fight on. Let's have those elections. We'll see how that plays out. 4 before 9. Let's come back to our conversation today with the Conservatives. What Kemi Badenoch has been saying as regards young boys. Simon's in Bicester. Simon, right or wrong, what we're hearing from Kemi? Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to take exception to what that gentleman said, that you are exception to the rule. You're
that was
not.
John, there's the caller John, yes.
There's plenty of us out there, plenty of dads, single dads, that have brought up their children, me especially.
Yep.
My son's 21 years old now. He's not into gangs, he's not into violence, he doesn't mix with dodgy people, he plays rugby, he's a sportsman, and as far as I'm concerned, he's a great person, he's an asset to society, and he'll grow up, and he spreads good vibes. You don't do that over a period of a year. You have to put 20 years' effort into it. You have to be every day, every single day. And you, Nick, are not an exception to the rule. There's plenty of dads out there, single dads that have brought up children, run businesses, look after properties, and we do it very well.
Can I tell you, no one goes into a marriage hoping it would fail, obviously, but having had the opportunity, I wouldn't have changed a minute of the time I had spent with my lads. It's been the best time of my life.
But you brought up two. You didn't just bring up one, you brought up two.
I know. It's no wonder I look so old. No wonder I drink so heavily. You know the pressure's involved.
Hang on a minute. You, in the last 6 months, have been sharper on the radio. I don't know if you've changed your diet or what it is, but you've been more sharper. You have.
Oh, right.
You must know you have. You've been sharper and quicker and gone through since marriage. It must be marriage.
Bless you, Simon. There's a good woman in my life. That's what it is. Simon, have a great one. Best wishes to your lad. I'm delighted it went so well with him. Thank you, sir. Let's get it. We've got about a minute left before we give you a full news update. Alice is in Enfield. Alice, what are you going to say to this? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Well, I have a son who's 12,
yep.
And I'm married, and he's got his dad, who's very much involved in his life, and he also has his stepdad involved.
Right.
He's very quiet and very polite.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I'm listening to him talking to his friends, and they're listening to music, and the songs are like smack this, smack that, and I do feel like he's got strong role models in his life, and if children don't have a strong role model in their home,
how is the dynamic between his father and his stepfather? Does everybody sort of, you know, I mean, obviously it's a little bit tense, but everybody gets on?
No, yeah, they do get on. I've actually got a 7-month-old baby.
All right.
And when I was in labour, my son's dad actually dropped my husband to the hospital because he comes to pick up my son for the weekend.
Goodness
so
me.
We've got a very, and I think that's very good for my son. It wasn't always like that. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But
okay.
It is like that now. And I think it is good for my son, but I do feel like music and role models in social media can influence children very heavily. When I was listening to music the other day when I was doing housework, and it was S Club 7 when I listened when I was young.
I know.
For the stars, and it's all very positive and talking about positive encouragement. And the songs now are quite derogatory, and social media influences all of these, you know, Bonnie Blues of the world.
Yeah.
Make boys feel like that's how they can treat women. And I think if they haven't got a role model in their household to show them that isn't the case, then that can be causing a lot of these problems.
Baby's first Christmas then. Is it a new one you had this year? Did you say 7 months?
Yeah, she'll be 8 months next week.
How exciting. Well, probably not. Yeah. Next Christmas will be the real one, won't it? When she's really crawling around. Have a great one. And I'm pleased the family dynamic is working so well for you. Alice, thank you. The music means we move on, though. Alice, thank you. Coming up after the news, a story I was just mentioning. 10-year-old girls asking for armed protection to go to Hanukkah parties in Manchester. So Stephen Watson, the chief constable of GMP, Greater Manchester Police.
Group of 10-year-old girls wanting to go to a Hanukkah party where they should be, frankly, interested in balloons and bicycles are making a request for armed police officers.
And PM Sir Keir Starmer hails today as Workers' Rights Day as new legislation is introduced. Meanwhile, bosses of firms such as Currys and Nick say it's not going to work. More jobs will go. Who's right or wrong over workers' rights? That's in the next hour. 9 o'clock news is next on LBC. Thomas Watts.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, European leaders have agreed to provide a financial lifeline to Ukraine. They struck a deal overnight to give Kyiv a €90 billion loan, but it'll be funded by borrowing and not frozen Russian assets. Belgium, where most of them are held, objected to that funding plan. The Polish Prime Minister, Donald Tusk, made this warning during the talks.
Either money today or blood tomorrow. And I am not talking about Ukraine only, I am talking about Europe. I think all European leaders have to finally rise to this occasion.
Thousands of confidential documents have reportedly been taken in a cyber attack on the Foreign Office. It's reported a Chinese hacking group, Storm 1849, was behind the breach in October, but ministers say it's not clear who perpetrated the attack and have warned against speculation. A government minister's rejected claims that the government is denying democracy by allowing some elections to be delayed. Votes in some council areas in England are expected to be postponed from next May until 2027. Reform and the Tories have condemned the plan, but the business minister, Chris Bryant, has told Nick it is simply the result of reorganisation plans.
If we're going to be creating new local authorities, does it make any sense to have a round of elections in areas where the people elected would only be in post for a single year?
LBC has learned ministers have quietly dropped a target to reduce premature births in England. A goal to reduce the proportion of preterm births by a quarter was introduced in 2017. It's the UK's biggest cause of death among children under five. David Badcock is chief executive of the research charity Born.
We have one of the higher rates of preterm birth compared to other high-income countries in Europe. We need to have better understanding of what causes preterm birth, and we can develop more interventions to either prevent it or delay it, and that will have a big impact on the outcomes of lots of premature babies that are born too early.
The Department of Health says it's determined to transform maternity and neonatal services. Essex Police has confirmed it will not investigate allegations Reform UK broke election spending rules in Nigel Farage's constituency. Officers say the claims fall outside a one-year statutory time limit. And there was an unexpected fall in UK retail sales in November. Most analysts predicted they would increase with Black Friday, but the latest figures show volumes were down by 0.1%. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 98.43. That's up 5 points. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers, driest in the south and east with the most rain in the north and west. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean?
Right, no more.
A chip and a crisp
combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy. Yeah, pure poetry that was.
McCain vibes are chip crisp combo hot snack thingies in a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after nine on Friday, 19th of December. Coming up in this hour, back to a story I've referenced in a couple of other conversations. In Greater Manchester, 10-year-old girls asking for armed police escort to go to Hanukkah parties. Is that the country we've created? Plus it is Workers' Rights Day, but many are concerned. Many big bosses are concerned, as are trade associations. I put this to Trade Minister Sir Chris Bryant.
One of the things I'm really pleased about, the way we ended up with the final version of the bill, which is now an act, is that we were able to sit down round a table with businesses and with trade unions and government and put together a package that really works for everybody together.
Plus, also in this hour,
the government has quietly dropped a target to reduce the rate of premature births by a quarter. I'm LBC's Helen Hodnott with the exclusive.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Two stories which are very closely linked, and they both affect how we treat our Jewish friends and citizens. One I've mentioned already in Greater Manchester when you have 10-year-old girls, and we're going to play you a little bit more about that in a moment. The other being, which I find quite extraordinary, how it is only currently in Greater Manchester in the metropolitan area of London that chanting the words globalise intifada could lead to your arrest. Now, this is nonsense. If you can't chant them in Bromley, which is part of the London Borough of Bromley, in London, but you can chant them in Bromsgrove, how hard is this? We all now know. And I won't read you the dictionary definitions again, but it is accepted in more than one dictionary that the intifada, while many might think that is meant to be peaceful, it is not, and it has associations with violence, and that's accepted. So why can't West Midlands Police, Devon and Cornwall, Hampshire, Staffordshire, when contacted by one newspaper, why can't they say, yes, we would do the same if there was a demonstration in Birmingham, in somewhere in Staffordshire, and I won't go through all the towns, you know what I'm saying. But here's the reality. It starts with maybe just some chants, then maybe daubing a swastika on the wall of a synagogue, then you move to leaving pigs' heads on Jewish graves, then you start shouting at and spitting at children as they arrive for school or nursery. And then you have to put up the sort of fences around these premises that you would normally see at a prison to keep the children safe. Security guards wearing stab vests to allow children to get into their nurseries. That's how it starts. People being targeted because they wear distinctive dress in parts of North London, being shouted at, vile slurs. The next thing, every Saturday, people on demonstrations chanting slogans they know cause distress and alarm to other citizens. That's how it starts, and no one does anything. Indeed, you would appear to have police forces bending over backwards to justify that sort of behaviour, why they can't make arrests. Even until fairly recently, waving flags of terrorist organisations. You do now get nicked for that, by the way. So don't be surprised it's gone that far, because warning after warning, swastikas on synagogues, pigs' heads on graves, missed and ignored, and now you have a community frightened 10-year-old girls to go to parties. Well done, all the politicians, all the police chiefs who chose to look the other way. You should be very proud of yourselves. And it took the murder, or the killing, murder, of 15 partygoers down in Australia for any action to be taken. And what links the United Kingdom and Australia? They've both recognised Palestinian statehood. Despite this being a clear breach of the Montevideo Convention, that there is no government currently to run Palestine, or it doesn't have borders. Now, I'm a fan of the two-state solution. I would imagine many, many sane people are. I can see the problems with it as well, because God can't make more land, so someone's got to give up land somewhere, so that is quite a hurdle to clear. But those sort of actions just encourage organisations like Hamas and Hezbollah. We've been recognised in Australia. We've been recognised in the United Kingdom. Did you know, and I don't think this has happened in the United Kingdom, I hope I'm right. Did you know in Australia, in the Jewish part of Sydney there, they were torching cars. They were setting cars alight that they knew were owned by Jewish people. Setting cars. And again, New South Wales police did nothing. I don't know about the state premier, I can't speak to him, but the prime minister did nothing. Just kept talking up the Palestinian cause. Why are you now surprised? Well, let's look at the chanting of globalised intifada. On yesterday's programme, we covered the joint statement that I've mentioned from Sir Mark Rowley and the Chief Constable of Greater Manchester Police, Sir Stephen Watson. And I took reaction from that from the Director of Investigations and Enforcement at the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, Stephen Silverman.
Although there's some relief that finally at least two police forces are seeing some sense, I think there's a fair amount of fury and frustration over this. The context has not changed. We were saying 2 years ago that these chants would ultimately result in violence against Jews. And look what's happened. We knew that this is where we would end up. And we were gaslit, particularly by Sir Mark Crowley, over the meaning of these chants. We live at a time when any minority, be they Muslim, black people, gay people, disabled people, say, this thing that you are doing makes us feel unsafe. It stops immediately. No one gets to say, oh no, but we actually mean this. That did not happen, as so often, with anti-Semitism, for the Jewish community. And now, as a result of it, there are dead Jews. It's good that this has happened, but it's too little, too late. What about the chance of death to the IDF? What about the chant of Chaybah Chaybah Ya Yahud, which reminds Jews that of a medieval massacre of Jews by Muslims that is going to come back and revisit them, heard on all these marches? It's not enough. It's something. It's baby steps. We are way past baby steps.
Not everyone shares these views, because also I spoke yesterday with the director of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, Ben Jamal. Mr. Jamal said this change in policing policy is an act of political repression.
Well, I would describe it as another low in the political repression of the right to protest in support of the rights of the Palestinian people in this country, which should concern everybody, anybody who cares about the rights of the Palestinian people and the oppression of the Palestinian people, anyone who cares about the implementation of international law, but anybody who cares about core democratic freedoms in this country. Let me express my position on these issues in relation to freedom of expression, free speech. I'm not what I might call a free speech zealot. I think there are limitations on political speech. I don't think people should be allowed to make very clear incitements to violence against civilians. But you've indicated yourself, and you played the clip from Mark Rowley, on the legal advice that the police have had, that there are many interpretations of what the use of the phrase intifada, the word intifada, might mean.
to Nicole Lampert, who's a journalist and anti-Semitism campaigner who wrote for The Independent yesterday, Stab Vests and Kill Drills, the children living in terror of being attacked in British schools. Nicole joins me now. Two aspects to discuss, Nicole, either the girls in Manchester or the use of the word or policing of the word intifada. With which one do you wish to start? Morning to you.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I suppose let's start in Manchester, and I spoke to one of the parents quoted in my piece is in Manchester, and she talked about how the attack on the Manchester synagogue, which is up the road from the biggest Jewish school in Manchester, had a massive impact on her children, particularly her 9-year-old boy, who was kind of obsessed with it and was terrified about the fact that in 4 years' time he was going to have to go to a bar mitzvah there. So it's absolutely no surprise that 10-year-old girls are terrified about going to a Hanukkah party. And that's the kind of state of where we are now, and that links into the globalizing intifada call, because what we've allowed to happen is basically radicalization happening on our streets. And the intifada word and the use of that's really just a kind of tiny element of a huge amount of radicalization we've seen in our schools, our universities, in our streets and every workplace too.
We know what the Met and Manchester are doing. What should police forces nationwide be doing about the expression globalize the intifada?
Well, I think it's not just about globalizing intifada. And I think, you know, what I worry about is that every other usage of intifada, such as intifada revolution or the intifada come. So what we need actually really from the government is some clarity. And we need to have that clarity from the CPS too. And then it needs to be rolled out. And then there needs to be discussion about from the river to the sea, Palestine should be free. You know, that's the call for the eradication of the Jewish state. And then death to the IDF, which is a new popular favourite one, thanks to Bob Villain from Glastonbury. So there are different ways. And what I worry about is everyone's going to hone in on one phrase. They're going to ignore the other phrases, and they're going to carry on ignoring the blatant anti-Semitism that we see on these demonstrations.
What happens next, Nicole?
I worry that they would just, you know, and go back to the 10-year-old girls. I worry that there's just going to be more dead Jews. You know, like we saw what happened in Manchester, and that still didn't really prompt our government to do very much apart from some weaselly words. And even with the death of 15 people in Australia, you know, we've got just one step up above from weaselly words, but very little actually happening. And just looking at the Facebook post on the Independent website, to the comments about my piece, and I was scrolling through last night, and the amount of hate was truly terrifying. Like truly just, you know, my heart just broke really looking at this pure amount of hatred. And I just don't know where this ends, to be honest. You know, I do have friends that are planning to leave the country, but the fact is the conversation is where is safe, and nowhere is really.
Not after the events in Australia. I'll let you go. I know you have to get off to a meeting. Nicole Lampert, your journalist and anti-Semitism campaigner. That piece was in The Independent yesterday. Stab vests and kill drills. The children living in terror of being attacked in British schools. Well, you have politicians and police officers who just show such lickspittle cowardice, you can hardly be surprised, can you? Also, we'll take your views on that. Also, coming up after the news, the LBC has learnt the government has quietly dropped the target to reduce the rate of premature births. Alexander de Carvalho's wife, Stephanie, gave birth to their daughter, Ophelia, 25 weeks into her pregnancy. Sadly died when she was just 19 days old.
A lot of the trauma for us, you know, in the days and weeks after just stemmed from the constantly changing reality of the outcomes that our daughter was facing.
We'll have more on that after this. It's 9:16 LBC News Headlines. Thomas Watts.
EU leaders have agreed to provide Ukraine with a €90 billion loan. LBC's learned ministers have quietly dropped a target to reduce premature births in England. And it's been confirmed the Foreign Office was the victim of a cyber attack in October. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's slow on the M25 anti-clockwise. One lane is closed on the exit slip road to the M11 northbound at junction 27 because a car has broken down. In Peckham, the A2 Old Kent Road is closed going into town between the Canal Bridge interchange and Glengall Road. It's because of an accident, so there are long delays. There are queues in Barnes. The Terrace is blocked in both directions between White Hart Lane and the High Street because of an accident, so there are queues. In Finsbury Park, there are queues on Seven Sisters Road in both directions at Finsbury Park Station because of the roadworks. On the trains, C2 have delays of up to half an hour and cancellations between Fenchurch Street and Grays because of problems with the signals. And that also means that on London Overground, there's no service on the Suffragette line between Barking and Barking Riverside.
This is LBC.
The big day is almost here, and you know what that means. Turkey. Well, not just turkey. M&S British free-range turkey crown with a pork, cherry and chestnut stuffing glazed with maple syrup infused with chilli, cinnamon, clove and nutmeg. It also means Cornish cruncher cauliflower cheese with Emmental pecorino and mozzarella. And British baby parsnips with maple syrup glaze with polenta and pecorino. This is not just food. This is M&S Christmas food. Selected stores.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £26 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits. Whoa.
Oh, should have stretched first.
Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's pick up on our conversation about anti-Semitism. Howard in Highbury. Howard, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Yes.
It's interesting that the lady that you just had on before the break, I've never met her. I don't have any enrollment in her yet. What she says is, you know, almost word for word, there's a parity between what she's saying and my family and a lot of Jewish friends and family that I've got. Right. I've got a young daughter, and directly after the Manchester attack, we were supposed to go to synagogue to celebrate one of the Jewish festivals, which and most Jewish festivals are about happiness and light and love. And
Hanukkah's and about light, isn't it? It's the festival of light.
Yeah, exactly. And then the one after Manchester was called Sukkot, and we were supposed to be going to the synagogue for that. We're not ultra-religious. We're what you call secular Jews, so I don't wear a yarmulke in the streets. We don't dress, you know, we're normal, if you like.
You better use the word normal. I'm a bit worried about the word normal, but I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean,
you're not manifestly Jewish, let's put it like that. Yeah,
exactly.
That's probably a safer way. Yeah, on we go.
She was shaking and crying, and she didn't want to go on after marriage.
Sorry, how old is the girl? You haven't told us how old she is.
9 years old.
She's not old, dear God. Right, on you go.
And she said, I don't want to go, and I don't want you to go, because I don't want Daddy to get shot. We entered into a conversation through social media, which a lot of my friends say, don't bother. You're not going to change anybody's mind. And it is a cesspit of opinions. It's disgusting. Even to the point where some person said to me, your daughter deserves it because she is the child of a Zionist.
Oh,
when I say, and by the way, when you say Zionist, all that really means is that we believe that Jewish people have the right to live in Israel. That's it. I don't believe in, you know, I'm not a child.
My understanding of Zionism, it means that you believe in a state of Israel. Not the way Israel behaves itself. I want to clarify that necessarily at this time. But you believe in the principle of a state of Israel. So I am a Zionist. Yes, of course I am.
Right. Well, in that case, whoever this person I was talking to would feel that your children also deserve to live in fear. And this is what we face. And Jewish people, as a general rule, look, there's not many of us. In England, I think it's like 300,000 in the whole country.
Whisker under about 280, I think.
And with this mentality of, we don't really want to make a fuss, and a lot of people say, why bother? It's never going to change. And this is because, I don't know whether it's that laissez-faire attitude, or I don't know, maybe we don't represent enough votes to the politicians.
Oh, dear.
But it is. They always say that it's a canary.
I know.
Society.
Yeah, the canary in the mine shop. What did you tell your 9-year-old, and did you manage to get to a synagogue?
So we did on that occasion, but then when the Hanukkah thing happened, we went to a Hanukkah lighting last week,
yep.
And it was wonderful. It was beautiful. There were people from all ethnicities there, local councillors of, even there was a Muslim councillor there who spoke. It was wonderful. My daughter stayed in the car. She wouldn't come out.
Tells you everything, doesn't it? Happy holidays, Howard. Thank you for that. Best wishes to her and the whole family. And we'll come to more reaction on that in a moment. Now, as you've been hearing on the LBC News bulletins, and I mentioned a few minutes ago, the government has quietly dropped a target to reduce the rate of premature births in the UK by a quarter, LBC has discovered. Premature births, now they occur before 37 weeks of pregnancy, remains the leading cause of neonatal death. But a conservative target to reduce the figure by 2025 has been missed. Ministers have not set a new goal, despite the UK rate trailing behind compared to some other European countries. LBC's reporter Helen Hoddenott has the exclusive report, but be aware her package does include some harrowing account of baby loss.
It's quite hard to explain, when your child passes away in your arms, what you should feel, because I don't think many of us are trained to experience or understand how to deal with something like that.
Every hour in the UK, 6 babies are born prematurely, all too often resulting in lifelong disabilities and, tragically, the deaths of around 1,000 babies each year. Alexander De Carvalho's wife, Stephanie, went into early labour and delivered their daughter Ophelia at Westminster and Chelsea Hospital just 25 weeks into the pregnancy. 3 days later, a scan revealed a bleed on Ophelia's brain.
A lot of the trauma for us, in the days and weeks after, just stemmed from the constantly changing reality of the outcomes that our daughter was facing. Every day you would get comfort in, a disability, be it mental, be it physical, being there. You'd go home, kiss your other kids goodnight, come back to the hospital and be told the likely outcomes were worsening.
Ophelia's condition deteriorated and she died just over 2 weeks later, aged 19 days.
If we reflect now, 3 years later, on what Ophelia meant for our lives, we still see her as the greatest teacher that we've ever had. And he's helped us understand that, a short life can be just as impactful as a long life. I don't think a day goes by where we don't celebrate her.
In 2017, the Tories set an ambitious target to reduce the rate of preterm births by a quarter by the end of this year. But LBC has learned that target has now been quietly ditched by the government. And that's despite experts saying premature births are preventable. The charity Born is at the forefront of research into how to reduce the rates. They've teamed up with Princess Beatrice, whose daughter was born several weeks early.
I think so often, especially as mums, we spend our lives, feeling, we have to be perfect to do this. And sometimes when you are faced with that moment of learning that your baby's going to come a bit early, it can be incredibly lonely.
Emily Patterson is a research assistant for Born, based at Chelsea and Westminster Hospital, working with mothers to identify signs labour might start. She told me what she's working towards.
The ultimate goal is to prevent preterm labour. By understanding the processes behind that, we have a much better chance of really creating targeted treatments and therapies.
A spokesperson for the government said the Tories were not on track to meet the 6% premature birth rate in 2025, but said this government is determined to transform maternity and neonatal services to ensure all women and babies receive the highest quality care.
Helen Hoddenott with that exclusive report. Let's speak with Fiona. Now, Fiona, I understand, thank you for coming on the show, you've had experience of this. How much can you tell my listeners? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I've had 5 premature babies. And And I have faced that terrible feeling like Ophelia's parents faced, that my baby would die. And every day I am so blessed that my children were the children that lived. And
so
I think
just to clarify, I'm sorry to talk over you. So all five are still with us, just to clarify.
All five of them are still with us, and they are wonderful human beings, but they have challenges. And I think people see the miracle of a premature baby, and they are miraculous, you know, and the NHS is incredible in how it can nurture them and save them. And, you know, they look like perfect little humans with eyelashes and fingernails, but they have all these difficulties that you don't even realise straight away, that their brains aren't grown, that they can't breathe. And so as they grow up, they kind of miss their milestones, and then you realise that they're not ever going to catch up and that there's something more fundamentally wrong.
Fiona, what are the ages of your children now, and can you recall their approximate birth weights so my listeners can get a sense of how tiny they were?
So my eldest, Finn, he was born at 28 weeks and he weighed just over 3 pounds, and he's now 26. And then my next one was born at 33 weeks, and he was a little bit heavier. He was 4 pounds.
Okay.
And then the twins were at 31 weeks, and they were about 3 pounds each again.
Right.
So they were tiny. Finn was about the size of my hand.
Goodness me. Did the doctors ever discover why you are so liable to have premature birth?
No. We don't know. 26 years on, we still don't know, and I don't think that we're any closer to finding out. So obviously, after Finn was born, so very early, I was watched really carefully. I had amazing care. And the second, my second son was born after a placental abruption, and we thought that was something completely different, not at all connected. That was just another piece of bad luck. And then the twins were born early, but twins are often born early because, obviously, they're jostling for space inside you. So we just don't know. And I feel that 26 years on from Finn being born so early, we're not really much closer to knowing why this happens.
And, of course, now we learn that the government is trying to drop this initiative. What impact will that have on mums who have prem children?
I think it shows such a lack of understanding of the real cost of prematurity, because Finn is in residential care now. He'll need one-to-one care for the rest of his life.
Right.
I was a carer for 26 years. He's only just moved into care. But the cost, the NHS is miraculous, and we've had speech therapy and physical therapy and occupational therapy, and they've had operations and so much care and love, and they've had special schools, and, you know, and I have done therapy with them every day for all those years, and they are amazing human beings, and, you know, and I am so joyous, and I celebrate them so much, but I think that they could have had so much easier lives. You know, the challenge is not to me, well, it was, but the challenge now is for them, and their life opportunities have been lessened because of their premature birth.
And are they, I hope you don't mind me asking this question, are they all going to need residential care as they get older? Or?
No. Finn is by far the most seriously disabled.
Are they able to work, your other children?
Yeah, my second son is miraculous. He has cerebral palsy, and he has had a life of physiotherapy, and he walks with splints, and he actually works as a hospital porter in the hospital where he was born.
Yeah, goodness me.
But he does need a little bit of help every day, and he has to wear these splints on his legs every single day of his life.
I've enjoyed our conversation. Best wishes to them all, Fiona. Thank you. Happy yourself a happy Christmas. Actually, on that, thank you, Fiona. On that, I'm just going to read this from Peter in Welland Garden City. Nick, you have to stop saying happy holidays. It's Christmas. This is the problem with this country. We're a Christian country. Say Christmas, not holidays. I know you won't read this out. Peter, the gentleman with whom I was speaking was Howard, and he was Jewish. Do I need to spell out the rest? They celebrate Hanukkah, not Christmas. I just wish, and I wish you, Peter, I guess probably a happy Christmas. But when you're speaking to a Jewish person, do I have to join the dots for you, Peter? Have you got it now? It's 9:30, coming up after the news. Is it right or is it wrong? It's workers' rights day, but bosses are crying foul. We'll have more on that. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. The news is with Thomas Watts.
President Zelensky says the EU's agreement to loan 90 billion euros to Kyiv truly strengthens our resilience. The payment will be funded by borrowing because EU leaders couldn't agree a deal to use frozen Russian assets. Thousands of confidential documents have reportedly been taken in a cyber attack on the Foreign Office. It's understood a Chinese hacking group was behind the breach in October.
LBC has learned a target aimed at reducing premature births in England has been dropped. A goal to reduce the proportion of preterm births by a quarter was introduced 8 years ago. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers, the driest conditions in the south and east, the most rain in the north and west, a high of 11 degrees.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
With the Work and Pensions Secretary, Pat McFadden. Do you see it as your mission, as your job, to reforming welfare, to cutting welfare?
Changing people's life stories should be part of this argument, not just looking at a spreadsheet of income.
I can just be clear with the country, it will mean cutting people's benefits.
I'm not going to rule things in or rule things out.
Why?
Today, because I want to...
If we can see the sustainability figures, you've said yourself that in the long term it's not sustainable, so therefore it must mean logically that we must spend at some point less money on individual benefits.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Take the world's best snooker players. One of the most unpredictable seasons. At the electric atmosphere of Alexandra Palace. It can only be the 2026 Johnston's Paint Masters. Could it be Sean Murphy, Judd Trump, Neil Robertson, or world champion Zhaoxing Tong, who takes the trophy? One thing's certain. Nothing beats the Johnston's Paint Masters. Live. Enjoy our biggest ever fan zone. Watch in style from VIP sofas. Book now. WST.TV/tickets.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £26 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits.
What? Oh, should have stretched first.
Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friends, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
We'll talk about workers' rights in a moment, but Ryan's in Thurrock talking about your daughter. Was she premature born? Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Nick?
Good, thank you. You had a premature daughter, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. But yes, so my wife's water broke about 29 weeks.
Right.
And some 30 weeks, my daughter was born, weighed £3.5.
£3.5, tiny little thing. Probably could fit almost in your hand, I would imagine.
Literally, I've got a photo of her in my hand, mate. Yep. Yeah. And, she's in the incubator for a good probably week and a half, 2 weeks, and she sort of came out and she started breathing herself, and, she's doing really well. She's now 9 years old, and she's one of the tallest girls in her year.
Is that right? So there were no difficulties at all? I mean, at what age did she... Obviously, she's going to be smaller as a baby. At what age did she sort of catch up and indeed overtake them, would you say?
Well, as soon as she started school, she was always sort of the same height as all the other kids there, to be fair. So she really still caught up quite early.
And just out of interest, is she your only child, or did you go and have other children with your wife?
I've got 4 children.
And the others were all sort of on or about time?
Yep, always about time, yeah. One was born at 37 weeks.
And lastly, the level of support that was offered to your wife by, I assume, the NHS when your daughter was born, how would you characterise that? How would you describe that?
It was really, really good. Yeah, all the doctors were really nice. Really looked after her and the daughter. All went really, really well. Yeah, that was in Twins in Romford.
Okay, good. What are the age ranges of your family, your children?
I've got 9. My daughter is 6 on Christmas Day, 4, and my little boy is 18 months.
I think it's going to be busy in your house next week. It'll be pretty flat.
Very busy.
Have a good one. Happy Christmas. Enjoy it with the family. We'll have more on that in a moment. Now, if you were listening in the first hour of the show, I told you that this is seen by the Prime Minister, at least, as a great day as they bring in their rights for working people. He says, the Prime Minister says, it will make life better for hard-working Brits who are the backbone of our nation and our economy. Going on to say more than 15 million people across the UK will benefit from new protections under this law. Well, we're going to be speaking with employment lawyer Nick Lurich in a moment, who will explain or spell out exactly what these changes mean. But on the round today was the Minister for Trade, appropriately enough, Sir Chris Bryant, and I asked him what we would expect then that would become law.
The Employment Rights Act, which has come into force. So most things start on the 1st of April next year.
Yep.
So we have parental leave, which is unpaid, but paternity leave, that starts on day one from April next year. And likewise, getting rid of the three-day window that you used to have to start sick pay, that starts in April next year. Some other measures we're going to roll out over a couple of years, because one of the things I'm really pleased about the way we ended up with the final version of the bill, which is now an act, is that we were able to sit down round the table with businesses and with trade unions and government and put together a package that really works for everybody together. So, for instance, as you know, one of the things lots of people use zero-hours contracts. That works for some people, but sometimes it becomes exploitative. We said in our manifesto we would get rid of exploitative zero-hours contracts. Over the next 2 years, after April next year, we'll be working with businesses to make sure that we have a package that works for ending exploitative zero-hours contracts. Similarly, we want to get rid of fire and rehire. It just seems manifestly unfair that one day you're employed by somebody, you're fired, and then the next day you're rehired on worse terms and conditions. That seems manifestly unfair. Again, we're going to be working with businesses and trade unions to make sure that we get that package right over the next 2 years.
You're probably aware the Currys boss, Alex Baldock, says the harder, riskier and more expensive you make it to employ people, the fewer people will be employed. He's joined in that sentiment by the next boss, Simon Wolfson. Between them, they employ 56,000 people. Why are you and your colleagues right and these bosses wrong?
That's why I think it's right that we come to a compromise. Look, there's a balancing act that you have to achieve here. Of course, you don't want to enforce such a burdensome regime on business that they simply can't prosper. But I think this is a sensible set of measures. If you ask most ordinary people in the street, do you think a business should be able to employ you one day, fire you that evening and rehire you the next day on worse terms and conditions? They go, no, that's manifestly unfair. And I think if we have a country which is just a little bit fairer, we'll probably have a country which is a bit more at ease with itself and more able to prosper economically.
Let's put the politics to one side and get to the practicalities. Nick Lurich, I'm sorry I mispronounced his name. Nick Lurich is an employment lawyer at the firm Broadfield and joins me now. So just to lay out, what is it exactly that's being brought in for workers with this new legislation? Good morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Well, look, the Employment Rights Act really is, I think, a once-in-a-generation change to UK employment law. And for those of us in HR, it really feels like what we need to know has doubled overnight. I think the change that has generated most of the headlines is in relation to unfair dismissal protection. At the moment, employees generally have to wait or be employed for 2 years in order to bring a claim for unfair dismissal. And the government initially intended to get rid of the waiting period entirely. But after strong opposition from the House of Lords and employer and business groups, a six-month qualifying period has now been put in place. Instead, this still represents a really significant extension in protection for employees. And we've also seen the cap on the level of compensation for this type of claim being removed too. On top of this, as Chris Brand kind of mentioned just then, we've got changes to statutory sick pay, so that will be in place from the first day of illness rather than on the fourth day as at the moment. We've got strengthening protection from harassment while at work, enhanced family-friendly rights, so making paternity leave a day one right, introducing new protection for pregnant employees and enhancing the right to request flexible working.
Where are we on zero-hours contracts, Mr. Lurich?
Yeah, so on that point, there'll be a new right to guaranteed hours. There'll also have to be reasonable notice of shifts given to workers. And individuals will also be entitled to payments if their shifts are cancelled at the last minute.
What's the impact going to be on the workplace for employers and for employees?
I think for employers, I think there's a lot they should be doing now. As we kind of heard just then, the changes will be phased over the next kind of 18 months. or so, but I would definitely be recommending that businesses and employers should be kind of taking steps now to consider how they might be impacted by these changes and start planning accordingly. They're going to have to focus much more or even more on having the right policies and procedures in place so that when they're kind of considering how best to manage their employees, they're reflecting these new changes to employment law.
And just lastly, you say this is a considerable shake-up, a major shake-up of legislation. That's what the Prime Minister is saying anyway in one of the papers today.
Well, absolutely. I don't think these changes can be kind of exaggerated, frankly. They really are a huge shake-up for us and in employment and HR law.
Grateful for your time, Nick LaRiche. You're an employment lawyer. You're with the firm Broadfield. And I won't get into the political arena because it's not fair, but other people are. Alex Baldock, as I said, you heard me say earlier, the boss of Currys, saying the harder, riskier and more expensive you make it to employ people, the fewer people will be employed. Next, boss Simon Wolfson agrees, and as you heard me say to the government minister, that's 56,000 people employed by those two companies. And if you don't want to listen to bosses, what about the Retail Jobs Alliance? Now, that includes companies such as Tesco and Marks and Spencers. They estimate 300,000 retail jobs will go over the next 3 years. That's 100,000 jobs a year, which is broadly 2,000 jobs a week. Well, we'll soon know. Dave's in Colville. Dave, your reaction to this. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you, because I'm not an employer, but I wonder how employers are feeling this morning.
So, as an employer of a small business employing about 25, 30 people, mm-hmm. We often take a chance on people to see if we can nurture them and see if we can make them into the kind of employee that we need. But that is now going to change, really, and we're going to rein that back. And the people that are really going to suffer are those who, you know, at the bottom end of the employee pile, and companies are just not going to take a chance on them. And so they're the ones that are really going to suffer. I just think it's a bad move by the government.
What sort of business are you in, Dave?
Manufacturing, so metal bashing, making products from...
How many people have you employed down the years?
Hundreds, probably 400 or 500 over the years.
What's your hit rate? Out of every 100, how many were bad hires, would you say?
Probably about 30%, okay. I would say.
Okay, and many would say, but these people deserve these rights as they get there. Indeed, the Prime Minister says it's a fairer way to treat workers. It's worth saying, to my knowledge, the Prime Minister has never employed anyone. Certainly he's never run a business. He has worked as a lawyer, but he's not run a business. What would you say back to him, Dave?
Well, that is something that really frustrates me, actually, because the people that are making the rules, I think by and large, have never run businesses. They've never been at the coalface. They've never had to deal with employing someone and then 2 weeks later you find out they're no good and all of a sudden it's then going to be difficult to get rid of them. It's just hard, and I think the people making the decisions need to be experienced in running businesses to actually make good decisions.
And I think lastly, obviously your company is not on the same scale as Next or Currys, but when those bosses say we're just going to employ fewer people and it's harder anyway, admittedly your company not the same size, but you say exactly the same way you are.
Sorry, you cut out there.
I say those bosses of Next and Currys saying it means that they will hire fewer people and it will make the employment situation harder. You'd probably say the same from your aspect, your perspective as well, Dave.
100%, yes.
All right, I can tell you're in a car. I'll let you be. Safe driving in Colville, which is in Leicestershire, and have yourself a happy Christmas. We'll come back to our conversation concerning works, particularly if you are an employer. But if you're an employee and you've had a hard time and you think that that will obviously assist you, we'll talk about that as well, and those horrific stories concerning anti-Semitism and globalise the intifada. Don't you dare say it in the Metro and Police area or in Manchester, but go for your life in places such as Birmingham and Kent where they haven't yet to make a decision. Bizarre, isn't it? 9:45, LBC News Headlines, Thomas Watts.
European leaders have agreed a deal to provide a financial lifeline to Ukraine. Thousands of confidential documents have reportedly been taken in a cyber attack on the Foreign Office, and a minister has rejected claims the government is denying democracy by allowing some local elections to be delayed. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers, driest in the south and east, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. On the M25 anti-clockwise, there's one lane closed on the exit slip road to the M11 northbound at junction 27 because a car has broken down, so it's slow going past. In Peckham, the A2 Old Kent Road stays closed going into town between the Canal Bridge Interchange and Glengall Road because of an accident, so there are long delays. There are queues in Barnes. The terrace is blocked in both directions between White Hart Lane and the High Street. That's because of an accident, so there are queues. On the trains, C2C have delays of up to half an hour and cancellations between Fenchurch Street and Grays. That's because of problems with the signals. That also means that on London Overground, there's no service on the Suffragette line, but in Barking and Barking Riverside. And Greater Anglia still have no service between Broxbourne and Hartford East. That's because of flooding.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
So all the calls from all the mums in all the years we've been discussing the misogyny crisis among young men were lies, according to Kemi Badenoch. What is wrong with her?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
The big day is almost here, and you know what that means. Turkey. Well, not just turkey. M&S British free-range turkey crown with a pork, cherry and chestnut stuffing glazed with maple syrup infused with chilli, cinnamon, clove and nutmeg. It also means Cornish cruncher cauliflower cheese with Emmental pecorino and mozzarella. And British baby parsnips with maple syrup glaze with polenta and pecorino. This is not just food. This is M&S Christmas food. Selected stores.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Gift more for less when you shop at the O2 this Christmas. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 of their favorite designer brands, including Nike, Tommy Hilfiger, Le Creuset, the cosmetics company store, and Lindt. Ticked everyone off your list. Start the festivities at one of our 30 bars and restaurants. Enjoy a movie or get competitive with bowling, climbing, interactive football, indoor skydiving, and more. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £26 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits.
Oh, should have stretched first.
Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk a little bit more about that workers' legislation. Sheena says you've still got 6 months, you could fire after 2 weeks. I think, and I've employed a lot of people, not my own company, I hasten to add, but I have actually employed hundreds, unbelievably down the years, for organisations such as Sky and The Sun, Daily Mirror, Fox and various other places. Sometimes it takes a few months to realise that they're not, it really does, it's just not going to work. Meanwhile, Pete in Milton Keynes says the only people who'll suffer with new employment laws are bad employers. Labour are for working people. This benefits them, so stick that in your Christmas pipe and smoke it. Well, I don't actually smoke a pipe, but anyway, thank you for that. Let's continue the conversation about anti-Semitism. Peter's in Stirling, been hanging on the line for some time. Peter, you're on the radio. Good morning. Peter, good morning. Sorry, mate, you've got to come. Anne's in Jerusalem. We go to Jerusalem. Anne, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hello and good morning to you, Nick. Good morning. I never actually thought that I'd pluck up the courage to actually speak to you. So,
here we go. Well, we're just two friends having a chat. That's all that's going on. How is Jerusalem today? How's the weather, by the way?
It's lovely. It's a bit cold, but blue sky and some sunshine. Enjoy. So, very nice.
Right, what do you make of a situation back here for your Jewish friends, or maybe if you've got family here, Anne?
Do you know, I don't know where to begin. I'm so upset. I'm so sad. I don't know what's happened to England, to that beautiful country. You know, I was born there, grew up there, educated there. Our children were born there.
Were you in London? Educated. Did you live in London?
I was in London. Born in Lincolnshire, actually, but living in London. Most of my life in London. Living in Jerusalem now. I don't know what to say. I look on it from here, mm-hmm. and I'm just devastated. I mean, it was a safe place, you know, when my children were growing up. There was never all this problem at university. You know, we were not afraid to walk the streets.
Well, you see, we're not just talking UK.
You know, I'm speechless.
Yeah, I mean, we're not just talking the UK, and we're talking Australia as well. Why do you suppose, in the time that, you know, you were raised and you had your children, the world has become more toxic and also more dangerous? Why do you suppose that is?
Absolutely. I don't know. I mean, I shouldn't say it on... I don't know. I think we never had mass immigration, for a start. I think that may be part of it. I don't want to say... I mean, anti-Semitism has always lurked in the background.
Yeah.
But never dangerous anti-Semitism as it is now.
Right.
It was never, you know, it was never lethal. I remember when my daughter was at school, we used to have we used to have parents sort of patrolling the perimeters. Sort of some of the mums walked around with a walkie-talkie.
Really?
You know, just to be sure that...
And how long ago... I'm sorry to be rude, but how many years ago would that be?
I'm saying about the mid-1980s.
Right, okay.
But we never... We were not... I don't know... We were not terrified, let's put it that way. Mm. We were a little bit, you know, wary, probably is more the word.
And lastly, how would you feel if you lived in London now and they had those marches almost every single Saturday, Anne?
I don't know what to say. I can't understand why those marches were not stopped. You talked to me about freedom of speech and liberal values and... But this is dangerous. I don't think people understand what the word intifada means. And the word leads to actions. And that's the problem.
Don't know what you have to be nervous about, Anne. Thank you. Have a safe day. As regards to the demonstrations, I would challenge you there. You can't have demonstrations where you are knowingly carrying flags of terrorist organisations or chanting messages or slogans that you know cause distress to fellow citizens. But you can't just ban... I don't think, and respectfully, you can just ban all protests full stop. I don't think we want to live in a country like that because, I don't know, that would be like living in a country where, oh, I don't know, jury trials were suspended and you didn't have democracy and we had ID cards mandate. Blimey, perhaps we are there. Peter's in Stirling. I think we're going to hear you this time. Peter, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Sorry about that.
Not at all.
Can you hear me?
I hear you well. Pardon?
Perfect.
Go ahead.
First, I'd just like to say I condemn the idiots that say globalised, that I'm not even going to say the word. I am pro two-state solution, but if you can't get your point across without shouting that, then I don't know if you're worth listening to.
Right.
However, I am a little bit concerned now that with all of this and the focus on the Palestine protests and everything else, we've become a bit blinkered, and I'm seeing it online, that people are thinking it's exclusively an issue with the Palestine protesters and the radical left.
Mm.
I've seen people denying or downplaying, slaves of this country, denying or downplaying the rise of the far right and unabashed Nazis. Now, there was a story that may have gone under the radar of most of your listeners that happened on Saturday, the day before the Bondi Beach attack.
Mm-hmm.
A picture was put online of 40 masked men standing on the on the steps of the town hall in Kirkcaldy in Fife, doing Nazi salutes and holding an SS flag.
Are you sure this wasn't a falsely generated picture?
No, it's been widely reported in Scottish media, in the local, and it's been confirmed.
I'm just waving at someone to get more on this. I'm staggered this didn't get more. I'm absolutely amazed this didn't get more.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. A teenager. So there are. Yes, it was true. There have been charges, so we've got to go carefully. So just your interpretation of what that represents. We can't talk any more about the actual incident. Peter?
I would agree that there's, I think, hatred generally towards Jews, towards anyone, really, any demographic, particularly Jews at the moment, has become almost, we've become desensitized to calling out, you know, we don't call out hatred, we accept it too much, and people who would normally not say these things out loud feel emboldened to.
And certainly that, and I'm grateful to you, I was not aware of it. It gets a bit difficult for us to comment any more about it because someone has been charged. In fact, we can't really comment any more about it. But we will make sure we watch that as it goes through the courts. Peter, thank you for your input. I want to finish with you because I do want to give a fair amount of time to, and thanks again, Peter. Thank you for making me aware. Sam in Borden, we're talking about premature births, and I understand you had a premature birth. How small was he or her? Good morning.
So, good morning, Nick. So I had my first son at 26 weeks and 4 days, and he was 1 pound 10.
Gosh,
he didn't survive. But a year later I had another son, and he was born at 26 weeks and 4 days again. And he was 1 pound 14. And he survived. He's now 26. He drives. He does have cerebral palsy, but only mainly in his legs. But he plays football for his team. So he's, I'm really proud of him.
Of course. Did you have other children, or just, did you say the, did you say the child you lost was a boy as well? Sorry.
It was, yes.
Did you just have those two, or did you have other children?
No, I had children after, and I managed to go, so my next son was 38 weeks.
Yeah.
And then my daughter, she was 40 weeks.
Right.
So I went from one extreme of premature babies, two of them, to the other end, you know.
Did the doctors ever figure out why?
No, but I was epileptic, and I was on a drug, Epilim. You may have heard of, I'm not sure.
I've not, no.
No, okay, so the people who were taking it at the time didn't know, but they do now. They don't give it to pregnant women.
I see.
But I was off it. I had been off it for about 3 years before falling pregnant.
Right.
But I can't find anything anywhere that tells me that that's the cause of it. I have no idea.
Let me ask you lastly, the level of NHS support you were given, the one you sadly, the premature child you sadly lost, was it a good level of support? Did it leave you not really knowing enough? How would you characterise it?
Not knowing enough. I mean, they did an autopsy on my first son, and the consultant was amazing, fantastic consultant. But she said, we've done the autopsy and we can't see why it's happened. But they kept a close eye on, obviously, on my next son. And maybe they did say to me, because of those few ounces, he survived.
Isn't that incredible? Sam, I will leave it there on a positive note, noting, of course, that the the first one didn't. Thanks for that, Sam. That's the last word of the week for me. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. You can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions. Put your newscatchers in the order that you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's me for the week. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I will be back with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, have a safe weekend.
Thank you very much indeed, Nick. You've just confirmed my fears, actually. Well, it's not the end of term, is it? I think I'm going to have to check now. I think I break up today. I think I break up today, but I normally mirror whatever it is you're doing. Perhaps I've actually got a little bit early. I've got premature celebration going on. So there is no end of term feeling in the air, which causes me to resist some of the temptation to start looking back, perhaps, rather than looking forward. If we were to try to distill down to the single most significant moments of the year, I suspect we'd probably all agree. But I want to begin with a very current story. And to my mind, actually incomprehensible intervention of Kemi Badenoch on the misogyny story.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has thanked EU leaders after they agreed a huge interest-free loan for Kyiv. The £78 billion should support Ukraine's military and economic needs over the next 2 years. It'll be funded by borrowing and not frozen Russian assets. The Shadow Housing Secretary, Sir James Cleverley, told LBC it's vital that financial help continues.
We have to send the message both to Moscow and everywhere else in the world that we don't run out of steam, that we don't throw our friends and allies under the bus just because this conflict has run on for years. We've got to stay strong. We've got to support the Ukrainians. And ultimately, we've got to make sure that Russia pays reparations to Ukraine after this war is finished.
Thousands of confidential documents have reportedly been taken in a cyber attack on the Foreign Office. It's reported a Chinese group was behind the hack, but ministers say it's not clear who's to blame. LBC's Fraser Knight has more.
We've had it confirmed this morning that the Foreign Office was hacked back in October, that there was data taken as part of that, and an investigation is underway. Now, there had been reports last night that thousands of confidential documents, potentially including the details of visa applicants, had been taken, although we are told this morning from ministers that they're pretty confident information about individual people is not at risk here.
Australia is to open a new gun buyback scheme in response to the Bondi terror attack. Federal and state authorities are bringing in new measures after 15 people were killed at a Hanukkah event on Sunday. A target aimed at reducing premature births in England has been dropped. The goal to reduce the proportion of preterm births by a quarter was introduced 8 years ago. The Department of Health says it remains determined to transform maternity care. Essex Police has confirmed it will not open an inquiry into claims Reform UK broke election spending rules. It says the report related to Nigel Farage's constituency in Clacton falls outside of a statutory time limit. England's prospects are bleak after day three of the third Ashes test in Adelaide. Australia reached the close of play on 271 for four in their second innings, leading the visitors by 356 runs. Travis Head is 142 not out. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 5 points at 98.43. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers, driest in the south and east, a high of 11 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after ten, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Do you know what that little pause was for there? Just to make sure that Keith was paying attention. No, it wasn't. That little pause was because I know what I'm going to be talking about in the first hour. But the second hour, this is my final show of the year. I'm not going to labour that point because I fully appreciate you're probably not clocking off yet. Indeed, if at all, many people working through the Christmas period, including some of my colleagues. But, it is an opportune moment to have a little bit of contemplation of the year that has passed. And if we were to boil down to the most significant stories of the moment, I think in terms of international relations, in terms of the world that we inhabit, in fact, then it would be the moment that Donald Trump destroyed everything that the West has held dear for the best part of 80 years in the Oval Office when Volodymyr Zelensky visited. And the way my mind works is I've got that on one hand. I'm thinking about what we might discuss in the second hour, which will be a sort of explain to me the significance of ... or explain to me why this happened ... And the obvious one is the Oval Office. But do you know what the other one is? At the other end of the swimming pool, very, very much in the shallow end, the one that I am not equally fascinated by, because my fascination is of a very different flavour, but the Coldplay couple, the female half of the so-called Coldplay couple, has given an interview which makes it pretty clear that she is a woman much, much, much more sinned against than sinning. You read some of the statistics attached to the virality of that moment and your mind boggles. So I am drawn also to the question of why that story went so bonkers. But whether or not you and I, even as the year draws to a close, can do a double header, whether we can keep two plates spinning in the same hour, one of which looks at the collapse of the post-war order, and one of which looks at an incredibly modern moment of virality and essentially trivia, and poses the same question, I do not know. I do not know. So I will I'll leave that on the board. Lewis Goodall in the chair at the start of next week, by the way, in case you were worried. And given some of the people that have sat in this chair during previous holidays, I think you'd be perfectly entitled to be very worried indeed. But fear not. Lewis is stepping up to the plate. I don't know whether you were listening yesterday. If you were, you will have heard a succession of mothers, and I don't know why. I mentioned it at the outset, and then I realised that I was in danger of actually discouraging people from ringing in. It is always a conversation dominated by mothers. When we talk about the explosion of misogynistic attitudes among young men, among boys and young men in this country, it is always mothers who ring me. I came to it late. Sheila got there much sooner. I felt wrongly, completely wrongly. I want to stress that without any quibbling or qualification. I ignored Andrew Tate because I found him ridiculous. But the line between ridiculous and dangerous is often invisible. And I should not have done so. We should have been asking some of these questions even a year or more before we actually did. It's scant defence that Sheila got there first, and she got there in style. But it does at least mean that you had the opportunity and you were made aware of these looming and growing problems, these hideous developments. I don't know what the culmination would be. We may not even have reached the culmination yet, but I ignored it because I found him and his universe so obviously ridiculous that I couldn't take it seriously. And that was a huge mistake, because it doesn't matter what I take seriously, it matters what your son takes seriously. And if your son is taking this poison seriously, then we have a problem. You have a problem as a parent, I have a problem as a concerned friend, and we have a problem as members of the same society. So if you weren't listening yesterday, a couple of statistics that still stop me in my tracks. Government research suggesting that 40% of teenagers in relationships are a victim of abuse, of what we call relationship abuse. Even more staggeringly, more than 40%. So I think in, you know, headline terms, we could say almost half of young men hold a positive view of misogynist Andrew Tate. Almost half of young men hold a positive view of a man who essentially teaches your sons that women are there to be exploited, that they are measurably inferior, that they are not fully functioning or valid human beings. And your sons hold a positive view of him. Now, don't at me to tell me that your sons don't. I used to be a bit more impatient than I am now with this. But I do get it. You're not paying full attention. Your radio's burbling away in the background. You don't know who I am. And you think you just heard me say that all boys love Andrew Tate and it's all your fault. Of course, that's not true. I don't like the slightly smug confidence of, and I used to be victim of this, I used to suffer from this, thinking that you've got everything right, therefore you don't need to worry about it. You could have four children, and indeed we spoke to mothers yesterday in precisely this category. You can have three boys in the same family, with the same influences and the same parents and more or less the same life experiences and the same schooling and the same education and very, very different outlooks and attitudes. We don't know why. Humanity itself is